as you are aware, honourable members, that in July 2019, Parliament processed the budget of departments and entities in order to achieve predetermined targets encapsulated in their annual performance plans for 2019-2020 financial year. However, it would be appreciated as departments and entities are presenting to flag some of the issues raised in the budget report recommendations and determine whether they are implemented or not. For example, the vacancies in the GIS and the MTDA as a result of moratorium. Our role is to track on the progress with regard to implementation of budget report recommendations every time departments and entities are presenting quarterly performance. While we are also aware of the vacancies of the MTDA board, I believe the minister is fast-tracking the process to ensure the matter is referred to Parliament. As soon as the matter is referred to the committee, we will begin the recruitment process without any delay. Delaying appointments of the board members would result in the agency being unable to fill senior executive management positions, such as the chief executive officer. We will be writing from our office to the chief whip for her office to ensure that the speaker does check this on the agenda so that we must beat the appointment of this outstanding board member. With those few words, welcome once again. Thank you very much. I'm on item 2 now in terms of the agenda, which is apologies. We have received the apology from the Honourable House, and we are also aware that the Minister will open and leave because of the cabinet meeting. The Minister has advised me of such. We are aware of that. Without any further ado, therefore, because the Minister will be leaving, I think it would be best, Honourable Minister, that before presentations are made by department and entities, to give you the opportunity to give us an overview.
I'm going to deal. Oh. You want to note some apologies? Okay.
If I may, Chair, that we have received, I apologize that I didn't notify you before the meeting. Good morning, colleagues and Honourable Minister. We have received the apology of Honourable M. Dooley.
On Dooley, yeah.
Yes, she has apologized. She's not feeling well. And also Honourable Maluleka, who's attending the Education Portfolio Committee, so in relation with ours, but she has registered her apology. And also the Deputy Minister, I heard that also she's going to be joining us very soon as well.
Okay.
I'm sure the Honourable Minister will cover that. Thank you so much, Chair.
Honourable Dr. Reba.
Thanks, Chair. Just also to note the apology from Honourable Khaleb Kachalia, who had a scheduling issue yesterday, so he's unfortunately unable to attend. Thank you.
Thank you. I think the meeting is noting and accept the apologies, isn't so? Thanks. Honourable Minister, can I give you the platform?
Thank you, Chair, and colleagues, honourable members. We are indeed happy to be held accountable, and again, we will always present ourselves for that purpose. We have all the various leaders of the entities present here to adhere to the principle of being held accountable by our Parliament. That is the first area. The second area, Chair, that we wanted to speak to, indeed, you have already indicated that in the board of MDDA there are vacancies, and we hope that you will move with speed to fill those vacancies as Parliament, because as you will know, when you have a board of 9 members and you only remain with 5 members, the quorum for the board is 5 members. So when one of the 5 can't attend a meeting, and it has happened so many times that 4 members come to a venue of a meeting and one member for whatever reason is unable to come, then you then are faced with serious issues of fruitless expenditure. So we would really appreciate if Parliament can move with speed in filling these vacancies. As colleagues will know, the 5th Parliament had started on this process. So it will be most appreciated if the 6th Parliament can then conclude on the filling of the vacancies in the MDDA board. That's the first issue. The second issue again concerns a board of trustees of Brand SA. As colleagues will know, the board of trustees, the term of office came to expire in May this year. As a consequence, Brand SA, as we speak now, doesn't have a board of trustees, which is putting a hold on many issues, including appointments. But be that as it may, we have, as colleagues would have seen, we have already advertised for the board of trustees for Brand SA, and we have received, very interestingly, many, many aspiring South Africans who would like to be part of the board, over 155 applications. So there are many South Africans who would like to assist us making this board work. So we are at the process of shortlisting and doing the necessary processes, because this board is appointed by the president and not through the process of Parliament. So again, we are on course, as we have said in our budget speech, that we will be working towards ensuring that we stabilize all our entities. Again, in Brand SA, as colleagues will know, we still have the difficulty of the CEO and the CFO of that entity who still stand, for lack of a better word, dismissed. But they have indicated to make use of their recourse to appeal their dismissals by the former board through various panels that were set up for purposes of disciplinary inquiries. So both the CEO and the CFO of Brand SA, in terms of where we are sitting now, they are dismissed by the old board through inquiries, hearings, but they have indicated and again informed by the law that governs the Brand SA, they have every right to appeal, and the law says that they are deemed dismissed when the appeal process has been concluded. That's what is in the law. Now, that establishes Brand SA. They've both appealed to the minister. Unfortunately, the minister doesn't have the powers to grant them appeal. It's only the new board that can grant them appeal. So these issues that will also be reported to the committee as these appeals are heard by the board Of course, the board, the incoming board, will then also report to the minister. We will keep the committee posted on those matters. On the MTTA, as colleagues will also know, we have advertised all the positions. All the positions, from the position of the CEO and the other senior management positions, we are happy that we're able to advertise those with an intention of again stabilizing MTTA. The board will then be seized. In fact, already the board is working on the shortlisting of the CEO. As we speak to you now, this acting CEO is still the head of MTTA until the board of MTTA has concluded the question of appointment of the CEO. But we can tell you that they've already started with the shortlisting. They should be able to report to us in due course how far they have gone. And after they have concluded to the CEO, it will then be on the other senior positions, of course, that the board has to appoint. It will be up to them, the CEO, to then deal with positions that are accountable to the CEO. So that process has started again in the MTTA. The GCIS, again, all of us know that we have had an acting head of GCIS. We have again advertised for the position of the head of GCIS. We have received a number of applications. We have shortlisted. We will be starting in due course with interviews. So basically, we can say that even the work of stabilizing the GCIS is on course. Safe to say that as the GCIS advertised for the position of the head of GCIS, they did not advertise for the other positions, which are DDGs, heads of units within the organization. So as we speak, there is three vacancies of DDGs in GCIS and one position that has been filled of a DDG. So we still have to advertise for those positions. Hopefully, we'll be able to do so after we have been able to get the head, so that the head is then seized with all these matters. Stats SA, as we all know, do have a head, but again there are many positions that could not be filled at Stats SA owing to the difficulties in relation to finances. Again, as when we met the last time with the portfolio committee, we said to the portfolio committee, we will be raising the issue of Stats SA with Treasury, because we cannot be proud that we have Stats SA that is not having its full complement, particularly at senior management level. We have got many vacancies there. So because of our financial difficulties in this financial year, and because of the economic difficulties and challenges in this financial year, Treasury, National Treasury, has said that the Minister of Finance will be making a statement, a medium-term budget statement. In that statement, he will indicate what steps we as a country will take to stabilize that SA in the next financial cycle. But we can say that we are at least happy that Treasury though in many other departments will be announcing something that needs to be announced because they need to take and make prudent use of our financial resources, as it relates to State SA, they realize and recognize that we cannot have our own state agency limping. So as from next year, there is every indication from Treasury that they will assist us and State SA to at least fill the critical positions that needs to be filled in State SA. So we thought that we will just say those few words. Of course, since Brand SA is having those difficulties, we still have an acting CEO at Brand SA until the incoming Board of Trustees has dealt with the appeals of both the CEO, current CEO dismissed, and current CFO dismissed. Until their appeals have been handled by the Board of Trustees, we still are bringing here the acting CEO. The Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is here with the DG as the head, who will respond and speak to all the areas of focus for this quarter, similarly to all the other colleagues who will speak to the areas of focus for this quarter. But of course, as colleagues will know, there are many DDG positions that are vacant in the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation that have since been advertised, interviews have taken place. We are in the process of finalizing appointments. So we stand here again reporting to the committee that what we had said in our budget statement, both as we were participating in the budget of the president and also in our own budget, DPME, yes, we are on course in terms of stabilizing all the various units and entities that we are responsible for, as we have already indicated, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. We now therefore call on State SA.
Thank you, Chairperson. And again, good morning to honorable members of parliament and members of the portfolio committee, as well as appreciating the input by the minister in the entire cluster that he leads. Chairperson, the State SA delegation is accompanied by two colleagues other than your usual delegation. These colleagues are usually your most hard-working people out there in the field who do field work, and during part of our work as management that we go out and do our work, we do ask them from time to time to share their experiences with other provinces. So we have a team coming out of the Eastern Cape going to share experiences in Limpopo and the like. And this time we have Mr. Vincent Malukwane, a field worker who is coming from Witbank. And we also have Ms. Qhibi, Sibongile Qhibi from Mpumalanga, currently in the Western Cape. They are seated at the back, Chairperson. So at an appropriate time, we will, if I could ask them to rise just for purposes of being noted. These are people who are in the coalface of our work, and they happen to be in the Western Cape to share their experiences with their colleagues. So we thought they should come and see that the work that they do ends up being accounted for in other echelons of our state. Let us look at the presentation of StatsSA that will look at the organizational performance, financial performance, human resource performance, and of course the first quarter achievements, strategic risks, and priorities. This committee will remember that when the current SG was appointed, we said we will deal with matters of transformation in StatsSA, collective leadership, and rooting out the culture of fear and maintaining the quality of basic statistics. Chairperson, this committee once raised with us that collective leadership should not be a way of abandoning the responsibilities by the accounting officer, but it is very critical for building an organization that has structures that can sustain themselves. Let us look at the first quarter, for example, Chairperson. And in the first quarter, the work that we have done, the targets that we have done in relation to the first quarter. In relation to our work, we have reached 16% of our targets, and in terms of our spend, we have gone to 22%. And out of those, while 16% is achieved, 82% is on track and delayed is 2%. And usually this is because of the project nature of StatsSA's work. By the first quarter, it's almost expected that we should be spending and be performing in the region of 25%. But the nature and business of StatsSA is such that until a project is concluded and all documents and all information is out from the field and is being processed, we cannot say we have closed that account. The vacancy rate is sitting at 18.6%. Women in SMS is 41.5%, and of course, staff members with disability is 1.4%. These two figures, Chairperson, of women in SMS and staff members with disability should not mislead us. StatsSA is still lagging behind. We will talk about the population of women in StatsSA. In general, but women in SMS have always been around 40%. It's not like we have gone to improve anything. It's because some members of the SMS who are male have resigned, so the denominator shrinked, and in the process, the share of women increased without us moving any numbers. So that's the fallacy of numbers. It's the same with staff members with disability. We have been hanging around 1.2% for a very long time. So this 1.4% should not mislead Parliament to think StatsSA has made progress by 0.2 percentage points. It's not the case. It's because as staff members resign, the denominator becomes lesser and the share increases. Let us look at the progress against quarterly targets and of course, the finances. I'm going to skip this slide and come straight to the finances, Chairperson. The StatsSA budget is sitting at 2.5 billion, and in the process, 1.46 billion goes to compensation of employees, while 682 million goes to goods and services. And in the process, capital assets sit at 370 million. And the transfers go to 1.6 million. Now, in terms of actual expenditure by programs, as we said, we are sitting at 22%. Different programs, Program 3 has achieved the highest spend, sitting at 28%, while the lowest was recorded by Program 7, which is Survey Operations, sitting at 14%. And this is where the work is actually done. And when the account is not closed, we cannot say we have achieved anything. Now, let us look at our budget. We received 75 million once off from National Treasury, which is not part of our baseline. But this has assisted, and we really appreciate that effort by National Treasury, to stop gap the challenges that we were experiencing in the field, especially in relation to data collection in the provinces, particularly in Gauteng, and of course, Gauteng being the most populous province now, chairperson sitting at 15.17 of the entire population of the country of 58 million. We had serious challenges. We had the, of course, the spending on the 75 million is on track. As regards the census, we have 145 million in this financial year. The spending is sitting at 3.1%. The minute test is scheduled for October 2019, and we will see a lot of expenditure. So in the third quarter, there's a projected ballooning of expenditure in the project mode, and this 3.1% should not be a cause for panic for Parliament. Let us look at the human resources information of Stats SA. Out of the 2,857 staff members, 2,486, closer to 2,500 are black African, 150 are colored, and 173 are white, and 48 are Indian Asian. And in terms of representation, they are representative of the demographics of the country, as we will know that in relation to the demographics of the country, we are sitting at 81% in terms of the national population, 81% black African, 9% colored, 8% white, and 3% Indian Asian. We can see that as a general approach, the staff members of the other population groups other than your black Africans in Stats SA are actually lesser. However, when we go to SMS, which we will come to that, we will see a different picture. We will see a different picture. But let us start off by talking about your male-female cohort in Stats SA. About 54% of Stats SA's staff complement is female, and 46% being male. And the numbers are 1.5 versus 1.3 respectively. But when we go to SMS, there's an anomaly, chairperson. So you see there are a lot of black African staff members in Stats SA. But when you go to SMS, they are actually less represented. While they account for 87%, but when you go to SMS, they account only for 66%. So we see an over-representation of your white and your Indian in relation to the employment equity arrangements of our country. And these are issues that we will need to address at some stage when we have funding available. And in the process, our women in SMS are still lagging, sitting at about 41%, a reason that I've already explained. Now, in relation to key achievements, Chair, in the first quarter, we published 64 statistical releases out of 65, so it's only one that hasn't been published. And of course, we hosted the International Organization for Migration, and of course, relevant migration ministries had to come and discuss with us. We hosted the National Natural Capital Accounting Training Workshop, and this is very critical when you look at the SDGs, Chairperson and Members of Parliament, is that the issues of the economy and environment are becoming very, very critical, and we are a key player when it comes to the work that we do with the United Nations. The census of commercial agriculture, these are VAT-paying units rather than subsistence. We are continuing as of the phases that we are dealing with in 2019, the first phase being the frame preparation phase, March to May, and in the process, we have telephone-based activities in relation to the work that we do, and of course the confirmation of our geographic information systems for purposes of survey operations. Data collection is continuing, and of course analysis and report will be reported later in the year. As regards the census, we have decided to bring the entire value chain for the census, largely because, Chairperson, we have raised the issue of expenditure sitting at 3.1%. to demonstrate to Parliament that all is well in Stats SA in relation to the Census 2021, particularly in relation to the mini-test. Just for information purposes, Chairperson, With the census, you have a lot, a battery of tests that you should go through before you go out to field, so that you are sure that once you are in field, you are holding steadily to have returns of all the data that we need to account for. As of this quarter, we have already indicated what work has been done, but continuing until the end of the financial year, Chair, we are indicating our value chain, and indeed we will be in the field for data collection in October. As we deal with trusted statistics, and we have the value chain of statistics throughout coming out of collections all the way to publications, we have 149 computer-assisted personal interview business processes mapped. So what is happening is that in the olden days, we used to work on paper, bring all the paper, come back and scan it, and then have to correct every handwriting. But we are migrating to work on iPhone and smartphone-based personal interviews, which will be a lot more quicker for data, but also we will have no risks of data being lost out there in the field in the form of papers. The workflow design for the CAPI, that is computer-assisted personal interviews, has been completed in quarter one. The quarterly labor force survey parallel is in progress and will transit from paper-assisted interviews to computer-assisted interviews. Now, in terms of our key achievements, Chairperson, the increase in the use of statistics, we have seen 513,000 visitor sessions to the website of StatsSA. Some of them didn't result in downloads. What we have done with our website is that when you go to it, the key indicators fly out and you can easily capture them without even having to download a specific report. Out of those visits, about 20%, that is 102,000, resulted in downloads of our data. So data is being used out there, Chairperson. And of course, there has been an increased attention in relation to the census work, in relation to outreach there in the consultations of stakeholders, and we have gone to reach 7 provinces. As regards the work that we do, media is taking particular interest, Chairperson, with almost all the media houses, both print and electronic, taking particular interest in our work on almost daily basis. We can see, Chairperson, when we move, we are able to track our interactions with Twitter and the growth that we are registering, our interaction on Facebook, on audience reach, and of course, on the kind of articles that we have per month. It's very critical, Chairperson, that we monitor this, because the media assists us to reach out to the public on the product that StatsSA has, and we are kept a lot more busy. Just this week alone, we are addressing 3 portfolio committees here in Parliament. And again, next week, we will be back for other activities here in Parliament. Let me mention, Chairperson, that we will also, we were supposed to be releasing the GDP on the 4th, on the 4th of next week. Is it the 4th or the 3rd? The 3rd, yeah, of September, yeah, my apologies. On the 3rd, which we were supposed to release in Pretoria. But because of activities here in Cape Town, we might end up releasing the GDP here from here in Cape Town. Having said so, Chairperson, it is not a way of contamination of the numbers with policymakers before they are released. We will protect them at all costs, as we always do, but we cannot shy away to be always closer to those who need our services. And the GDP will be released at an appropriate time without any compromises. So that we will be in Cape Town doesn't mean anything closer to contamination, Chairperson. Let me continue to say that in relation to partners in statistics, we continue to provide statistical support to the IEC. other than the one that we have we know about in relation to status, say, having been asked to provide quality assessment for the recent elections, national general elections, including provincial. Status, say, continues to do a lot of work and has done a lot of work with the IEC in the background. One of them was the supporting in voter registration at the beginning of the year, and that work still continues in terms of updating of other work that they are doing. We provide statistical support in terms of the community chest with indicator mapping, and of course the consultative meetings were held in relation to the SDG country reports. Mpumalanga, and in this case, Chairperson, it's not trying to want to keep my political principal happy, having mentioned Mpumalanga. He's a national minister. That which province he comes from doesn't matter. But we have handed over the report to the Mpumalanga Economic Business Survey, and that is the phase two report. So we have been working with Mpumalanga for quite some time. We work with provinces in different activities. We are working with the Eastern Cape on the Kuga, and then we are working with KwaZulu-Natal on the Citizen Satisfaction Survey. So this is work ongoing. We have trained the Botswana Statistics Office on standards, and we participated in the 26th SADC Statistical Committee meeting, which is a meeting of heads of statistical offices of the SADC region. Chairperson, a capable organization, the SG visited six provinces. It is very critical, Chairperson, that all the 2,857 staff members, to be exact, have an interaction with on different platforms with the statistician general, other than in relation to seeing the statistician general on weekly basis. What is happening is that the statistician general releases a report, a newsletter to staff every week to reach every staff member of Status A. So every Friday, including this activity we are doing in Parliament, staff members must be kept in the know. But it's not enough. The statistician general must also be out there in the field. The statistician general must meet field workers, communities, and understand what is happening. And of course, in the process, engage with staff members to understand what challenges they are facing. So six provinces were visited. And of course, we had the SMS strategic engagement on the Census 2021 on the transformation and change agenda, and on the staff opinion survey and workflow design. We are busy capacitating our staff members in survey data analysis for development, and of course, we continue to realign the structure for purposes of responding to the challenges that we face. One of the things that we do here in mitigating for the challenges of loss of staff members owing to the matter that the minister has already raised, of a lack of funding, is that we are making staff members available to take up more responsibility in acting where they can, so that they are not hamstrung by waiting for promotion. But also because of Status's global footprint, as and when there are opportunities out there, we make them available. So our staff members are presenting papers in renowned conferences all over the world. Just at the stage, we have just concluded, or we are concluding, in Kuala Lumpur, the International Statistical Institute, which is like the World Cup for statistics, which meets every 2 years, where your statisticians meet all over the world. I'm pleased to mention that Status A is represented, and our papers from our staff members are actually saving, and they are presenting at such a conference, Chairperson. We have commenced with the five-yearly strategic planning process, and of course we will alert and inform Parliament at an appropriate time. We have dealt with the issue of implementation of e-payroll certification tool, and of course we have established the staff placement committee to deal with the issue of realignment to our new structure. The risks at which Status A is facing are at demand, supply, at person's level, and at budget. we will not actually overstretch the issue. The minister has already spoken on the issue of the 18.6% vacancy rate, which will be offset at an appropriate moment. But certainly, in relation to the demand at national, continental, global, and other levels, status say as information is highly demanded, and the basic statistics continues to be at risk in as much as is being demanded. And of course, this continued integrative statistical product, the value add, means that as much as we can, we will maintain basic statistics. We will not be able to unpack our figures going further, except at conferences by way of reports. Of course, the income and expenditure survey and the living condition survey remains a serious risk for poverty estimates, CPI baskets, and of course GDP estimates. Now, what are we going to be doing going forward? We have been reminded, even in the last quarter, Chairperson, that legislative reform still has to come back to the portfolio committee. And we are finalizing our processes from the side of government and the state attorneys and everyone, so that by the time we come back here, we know we have dealt with such a process. But this is a matter that we will deal with without delay, because this is a matter outstanding from the fifth parliament, Chairperson. We will continue to maintain the quality of cost statistics. The demands are much more immense, Chairperson. The demands are much more immense because as we stretch ourselves, we cannot fail the country in making basic statistics, your CPI, GDP, QLFS, and every cohort of statistics available. And in doing so, we will continue, and we want to assure this committee and the country that while there may be challenges of funding, there may be challenges of vacancies at StatsSA, all is well at StatsSA, and StatsSA will continue to do its business and provide basic statistics in all eternity, Chairperson. We will continue to modernize and innovate the statistical value chain so that it responds to international best practice as issues of big data, data revolution, artificial intelligence are actually reaching our shores, and we're a key player even internationally, Chairperson. The transformation of the organization and organizational reform forms part of our radar screen in our daily business, and actually our management team, as and when we meet, we actually monitor that closely, both in terms of form and in terms of content. We are rolling out the integrated indicator framework so that when we look at the NDP as our centerpiece to direct our development, and either way when we go to your SADC protocols, to your Agenda 2063, to the SDGs at an international level, and going to sub-national level at your provincial growth and development strategies, all the way up to IDP, our indicators can respond sufficiently. This is a work that we learned out of the 25-year review processes, that unless statistics are brought early, we actually will scratch the surface for indicators to evaluate our work, and ourselves and our sister department, DPME, have actually been engaging on this matter. Preparations for Census 2021 are continuing, Chairperson. And we will at some stage come to Parliament and brief Parliament accordingly in relation to the preparations of the next census. But let me say, Chairperson, that this slide says Ndihelakwal, which means I finish here. But, Chairperson, there is a take to this I finish here. When many of us were young, as young children growing out in the rural areas of our country, many of our forefathers and uncles were migrant workers working in the big cities. Our mothers and our aunts couldn't write. They couldn't read and write, and they relied on those of us who they called literate to write for them. When they wanted to finish a letter, they cannot finish it with sweet messages to their loved ones like, I love you or I miss you, because children were not supposed to hear those things, they would go deaf. If they wrote those things, they would go blind. Now they always continue to end with a letter ndiphelela apha and ndiphelela hanefa ndihela kwala. I finish here. Chairperson, the next slide I can give you assurances that it will be blank. I thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. The presentation is now open for discussions. Can you hold on, honorable Streber?
Sorry, colleagues. It's not a correction, it's just to put context to what has the actual incidences of dismissals that have happened in relation to the CEO of Brand SA. Where we are, the outgone board of Brand SA appointed a disciplinary panel to look at the allegations against the CEO. And the panel then recommended dismissal. But when the panel did so, the board was no longer in office. So where we are sitting now is that you have a panel recommendation that still needs to go to a board. And it is only the incoming board that will then look at the recommendation of the DC panel. I just wanted to put this in context so that listeners and other board members, outgoing board members, do not think that they've interacted with the panel recommendations. They have not. It's only the incoming board that will interact with the panel recommendations, then bring such recommendations to the minister for concurrence. That's where we are. I just wanted to make that point of clarity, Chair, so that we are not lost in confusion. Thanks.
Honorable Takashaiba.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. SG, for that presentation. Couple of points from my side. Excuse me. The first one is on the website you mentioned. I'm one of your regular users, and what I have found on the website might be... but I think it is important. If you just look up Quarterly Labour Force Survey South Africa on Google, you go through, what you usually find there is the press statement from the latest release. If I may make a suggestion that on that press statement, on that page, you actually also link to the full Quarterly Labour Force Survey. Because I sometimes struggle to go from the press statement to the full document if you want to see the actual figures. So that's one, perhaps a more general point about search engine optimization, the ability to find the latest QLFS as the first result on the Google search. I'm sure you have the technical guys on that one. But that would be my suggestion on the website that you mentioned. On the issue of, you used the word contamination, and I understand the spirit in which you used it, I would just emphasize that it's one thing to be independent and not contaminated, but I think it almost is a different thing to always be seen to not be contaminated or always to be seen to be independent. So I have no issue with what you said. I'm just saying that the fact that you thought it relevant to mention here might be an indication of always keeping in mind that the perception is almost just as important as the fact. So when you release these things, always just be cognizant of the perception, even if the fact might be different from the perception. My third point and question would be regarding the HR that you mentioned. It sounded to me, and I might be wrong about this, that the commitment to employment equity, and then I think it's especially important with Stats SA to mention this, that it is just as important at the so-called lower levels as at senior management level, especially if we keep in mind the fact that the census is coming up. So I have two requests or points on that. The first one would be that perhaps going forward, in the HR information that you provide us, could we also get a breakdown of the language capabilities within Stats SA, especially when it comes to field workers, because I think it's something that as we move into the census, it's going to be a challenge. I'm sure you are more aware of this than I am, but it's just something that always comes to mind, that when someone rings the doorbell, knocks on the door or whatever, and they speak your language, or, you know, it makes it so much easier for people to actually share this kind of information. So going forward, if we could get that kind of HR information too, I think it would be important. And then related to that would just be the point that we must really make sure that the field workers, when they go and interact with citizens, that there is also representation at the so-called lower levels to make sure that people can actually feel comfortable in their communities. We know that this is a relevant thing when people have to answer personal questions. So that would be my contribution. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Somo.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Let me welcome with the encouragement the presentation in terms of the SSA performance and the thinking, as it were. But let me say the side issue. It's an appeal to you, a good sir, Chair. I've misplaced my phone. If anyone sees the phone that does, you don't know. If you can. Honourable Minister, thank you so much. I'll get it later. Thank you so much. I hope you are not joking. I haven't said that, Chair. Around it, appreciating that if you look at the financials, Mr. SG, is that, let me just go to my notes quickly. 1 second, Chair, I'll go quickly to my notes. Under HR, compensation of employees. You've got there, that's the budget that you have highlighted there, which is 1.50 billion. Does it include your survey or your field workers, as it were, based on the programs that you would have engaged on, or is the full-time employees' salaries and wages, as it were? True, Chair, which one appreciate that the Minister has spoken to this matter in terms of the financial distress of the SSA. But I hope then the over expenditure of 62.5 million of 1920 would not impact negatively in terms of the predetermined objectives, as it were. I'm making that statement, and I need a sense of comfort in that space. The other one, Chair, I think you have preempted the other points that I was going to raise, and I'm encouraged that we have indicated those areas. We are looking forward to, through you, a good sir, Chairperson, and the Minister and SG, that the new mooted legislative reform that will come very soon before the committee, and we're looking forward to engage on that one, Chair. Other than that, Chair, one for now is satisfied with the performance of Status A, but being informed by the AG's report also that so far we're on course. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Malazi.
Thanks, Chairperson. And thanks to the SG for that presentation. I just have one brief point of curiosity here, which the Minister briefly elaborated on, that affects the HR capacity of the organization. Because as the Minister in his introductory remarks spoke about the upcoming plans in the MTSF plan, but if you look at the current human resource retention capacity of the organization, juxtaposing the vacancy rate and the reference to the fact that 24 staff members left in during the quarter, as highlighted in the presentation. I mean, I can't just help but worry what's the entity's plan in terms of ultimately having a fully fledged HR capacity that can do its work optimally, because it's a constant reference to how it's overstretched and its impact on the organization doing its work in the way that it should and what those plans are, despite the fact that there is limited funding in the current financial climate. Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister, any remark? To you and your team, of course.
Thank you very much. We have the SG who will respond to the issue. Safe to say that on the last issue, of course, it's quite difficult, but the fact of the matter is, as the SG has said, these colleagues who are in Stats SA are able to multiply themselves and do all the expected functions in the organization. We therefore need to thank them. I know for a fact that there are many who are acting in very senior positions, and they continue to do justice to what we have always referred to as serving the public. And they've gone beyond the call of duty. You are right. The levels of vacancy there are not that encouraging. But those colleagues that are there are able to hold the fort under the difficult circumstances and do work that is expected of the organization as a whole. I will then allow the SG to speak to some of the issues.
Many thanks, Chairperson.
This SG must not aspire to be the SG of any organization.
Thank you, Chairperson, and honorable members, and thanks for the minister to have dealt with that. At a broad level, we are also engaging National Treasury to deal with the funding model for Stats SA. We don't think that Stats SA should be funded with the current model, because we are project-based and there are years where we need more money, like every 10 years we need money for the census. There are times when we need money for your large-scale sample survey, like your community survey. And our regular surveys are about 30,000 households, whereas our large-scale sample surveys are sitting at about 1.5 million households. But also, what determines what should accrue to Stats SA in budgetary form? It's not only what we get funded for. It's who the client is. At this stage, the first client of our country is our respondent, and our respondents are increasing. The population is increasing, the number of households are increasing, and technology is even coming in. So we are maximizing on those, and we are discussing, Honorable Malatsi, with National Treasury. But the other thing that we are doing is, other than our staff members being kept busy by doing an extra work, we are allowing them a lot more space to be key players. Even some of them are actually brought up to sit in management where we discuss critical issues, so that we say, even if we don't have money now, your career growth should not stop. Because otherwise, when people start to think their opportunities for growth is stalling, they will leave. Obviously, we are making them a lot more competitive even for other employers, but we should never shy away from that. No organization should shy away from that, and we should address that. Honorable Shaiba, in terms of our search engine optimization, I think we will be able to improve on that one. And no doubt, we usually listen to our users, and every now and then we have a revamp of the website. It just is so frustrating whenever you can see the number coming out there, but then you find you have to go and search again in all our historic products. We should find a better way of dealing with that. this issue of independence, not only for statistical agencies all over the world, are actually finding it a lot more challenging, having to demonstrate that they are independent, even one, by the kind of logo that they carry all over the world and the way the logo is, then by the way they relate to policymakers. We find ourselves in a very interesting situation as South Africa. It's because the demand for developmental information, just this week alone, appearing before three committees and next week appearing before committees and interministerial committees, and the demand by political parties, we keep on being asked, even at the lowest levels, come and address us, come and share with us information. But we will always give assurances that as we do so, we understand our standing, and we will do everything, not only by way of just saying we are independent, but the structures that we put in place. We have a council that is independent. A minister will be meeting with the chairperson of council very soon to discuss other matters, including issues of independence. And at an appropriate time, the State Council, which doesn't work for StatsSA but advises the Statistician General and the Minister, and is not a board because the Statistician General reports directly administratively to the Minister, will have to address this committee and demonstrate those issues that we are putting in the cohort of independence and the narrative that comes along. It's quite interesting that when we make numbers available, even when the Statistician General reports to the Minister administratively, there is no preside. The numbers are seen by the Minister, are seen by political leaders, as well as by business leaders. The same time they are seen and heard by members of the public. And there has never been any attempt whatsoever to want to prevail on the Statistician General to lose their independence. And we keep on saying that to the public so that there is confidence in the numbers. We do use our GCIS for purposes of connections, GCIS facilities for releasing our numbers so that we can connect with Cape Town. So even if we are not here in Cape Town, Cape Town is always connected through our GCIS facilities. And as and when we need that space, I must admit, because figures of StatsSA, once the date is preset, the world knows the date for almost a year now when the GDP is coming. You don't move the date to accommodate. Even if they say there is something happening of national importance, you don't stop releasing the numbers. The numbers must always be released, Chairperson. In relation to languages, we will make that information available. Obviously, we will rely on what our field workers are telling us. One of the things we should know is that when we hire staff members at StatsSA, the language that they fill in on the form is not their home language. Most of them will write English. It's because they are the language they want to converse in on their daily basis. So that representation of the data, especially from StatsSA, in our permanent staff cohort, might not be very representative. It will lean towards English than anything. But when it comes to our field workers, we are aware of the balkanized form in which our country find ourselves in the past, coming out of your establishment, even of your homeland systems. While it's not the job of StatsSA to promote that and pocket of certain languages spoken in certain parts of our country, our respondents are demanding that. For example, a grandmother in Lusikisiki or in Masisi, you will send a field worker and the first question they ask, they will greet them in the language and they will tell them, you don't speak my language. So we are aware, we hire them. Our farmers, farming community, they will say, Exuk iman bat Africans can prat, and on still dimension bat Africans can prat out there in the field. So we are very focused on that, and we will make that available. In relation to the compensation of employees' budget, Honorable Lisom, it includes our field work. What happens is everything that is on the work program, as approved by the minister and as shared with Parliament, must be accounted for in the budget ask that we make as ZSA. So when we say the QLFS is included, when we say the census is included, it includes the field workers. The only compensation of employees' budget that is not included is as and when we have user-paid surveys, which are not part of our work program as approved by the minister and brought to Parliament. Because those ones, we could have a user tomorrow, Department of Health, that says, we want you to conduct the following work for us in the next few months, and we don't necessarily have to come to Parliament because it's not part of our work program. We just look at our resources, technical resources, and field workers, we have them in the database all the time, so we are able to harvest them a lot more quicker. But otherwise, we also, Chairperson, appreciate the encouraging message that we are getting from members of the Portfolio Committee in sustaining the work of ZSA at all times. I thank you. Chairperson, I forgot something. There's a slide, my apologies. We have paid our suppliers, 100% suppliers paid within 30 days. In the slide, we didn't include it here, but as we hadn't included it, when we were discussing as management, we realized we actually had an oversight. In one of the slides I presented, I just read over it. I should have shown it. We adhere to those prescripts at all times. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Somo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm happy to report that the phone that was in this place has been found. Thank you so much.
Just a remark. The SG says that on user-paid services that they do, of course, they can give us updated, but it's there in their annual reports. In their annual report, that is included. Of course, the SG won't know who will request certain services tomorrow or day after tomorrow, but to a consolidation of even those user-paid services are there in the annual reports. Thanks, Chair.
I don't see any other hands now. We will go to GTIS, but the minister must give us a preview before the presentation. If you can.
I've done so, Chair.
Okay. You have done on all and
all of them, yes.
Okay. Pardon, Minister.
Good morning, Honourable Members. I am going to be reporting on the first quarter of the GCIS, and with your permission, I'm not going to go through slide by slide. I will try and spend a bit of time on the areas of deviation, but before I get to that, I would just like to give a high-level success of the first quarter. Honourable Members, the mandate of GCIS, which I think we've explained it before, is derived from the constitution of this country, that we are compelled as government to make sure that South Africans are provided with the information and information that will empower them at the right time and relevant information. So that is the key mandate of the GCIS, of course, working with all the governments in sourcing out that information. We as a department have got three branches, the branch of the administration, the second branch which is responsible for the content harvesting and packaging of the content that has to be interfaced with the general public, and the third branch is our what we call a stakeholder branch, which is a branch that is responsible for interacting with all the relevant stakeholders. When we say all relevant stakeholders, we involve government departments, we involve the members of the media, we involve the communities themselves, and we also engage with the NGOs, because I think we believe that the government communications, one of its core responsibilities is to be able to be the pulse of what the people feel about government, and I think that's where it resides. So the key successes in the last, in the first quarter of this year, if I can zoom in on the developmental, I think you will know the developmental communication activations, which is basically the interaction with the public. We have exceeded our targets. We've had engagements in that first quarter of plus minus 455. What this activation, honorable members, involve? It involves dialogues in communities at district level. This involves the activations in taxis. It involves activations in malls, and generally an activation also with the members of the media or the general NGOs in communities. So that number is the whole myriad of all those activities that encourage the activation between ourselves and the community. And I should also say that one of the advantages of this activation is that they enable GCIS to get a sense of what really bothers the communities, because I think they become the ears of government in terms of what is happening in those communities. We also use this activation to also work with the politicians, the executives, in interfacing with the communities, particularly in their respective portfolios. The second success area in this, in GCIS has been the capacity building. I think, honorable members, you will note that one of the things that we invest a lot is the capacity building of government communicators. We often hear that, to what extent do you train government communicators? We've got a whole section that facilitates that interaction, that training, and I think we also highlight the number of training that we have invested in this first quarter, and we should also indicate that training of government communicators is an ongoing thing, and because we believe that the fact that the person was a communicator last year doesn't mean that she should actually go through another refresher course in terms of how they project themselves, because they basically are the messengers of government news. And the other area that we would like to also highlight in as far as our mandate is the interaction with the members of the media. You will note in our report we mentioned the number of engagements that we have had with the journalists. And I think we should highlight here that journalists for us, love them or hate them, they are an important stakeholder for us. We don't engage with them because we want to change how they write their stories, but we engage with them with the purpose of making sure that we provide them with the information, because we believe members of the media, one of their core mandates is to inform society and to educate society, and we remain a resource in as far as providing them with that information. The other area of the GCIS, which is around production, I think we've done in our report, we highlight the number of production that we have done in the quarter, which ranges from the publication Vukuzenzele, which is mainly for the rural and peri-urban areas. We report on the number of My District, which is a publication that is solely for local municipalities. And we also report on the public sector magazine, which is solely directed to senior management in the public service. We also do a lot of media reports and media monitoring for the purposes of assisting government departments to be able to understand what is being reported in their respective portfolio. We also have a radio program that we do for the purposes of disseminating information, and we do a lot of that this work through the community media platforms. And lastly, in the area of the administration, I think we can safely say, honorable members, in the quarter under review, all the compliance requirements, we've met them, which I think runs in terms from year-end submission of our reports to the Auditor General, paying of invoices. Our report does also highlight, because we do pay particular attention in monitoring how we pay service providers. In our report, we highlight the number of invoices that we have received in this quarter and how many of them we paid within the 30 days, and all of them we did pay them within the 30-day period. Chairperson, the slide that I'm going to be highlighting is around the establishment of the GCIS. We have a staff establishment of about 416. We highlight the percentage of the current vacancies. I'm not going to 10.9%, which is vacancies, but I'm not going to mention much because I think there is already a process underway of filling the post. We also pride ourselves, Chairperson, with a graduate internship program, and I think what one of the things that we really we want to highlight with this breed of young people that we have within our organization, they have made a huge difference in terms of the innovation and the ideas. They're quite vibrant and they try and inject a new ideas in how we communicate, particularly with the young people. I mean, the amount of brainstorming when we do to say how do we package this for a particular audience, it's amazing how much of innovation that we get from these young graduates that are within our organization. We take them on an internship of 2 years, and they are, this bridge that we have currently, they are on their first year, and we're hoping, and the good thing, Chairperson, with the internships that we have, a number of them end up being GCIS staff members, because when we have a vacancy, they become a natural candidate for the filling of the post. We also highlight the number of filled vacancies and of at senior management level, and we also, the next slide also gives a breakdown of the levels, senior management at level 15 to 16, 13 to 14, and I'm not going to read all the numbers, but that's how it is reflected. The next slide, Chairperson, also reflects the gender parity. The female, you will see that this is an organization that has got quite a lot of women. That's why it's so effective, because it's got 50% of women. it's got a 50-50 split, in fact, it's actually more when you don't look at the SMS level. At SMS level, we 50% women, and we actually at 58%, which is the split of the. Then you look at the disability, Chairperson, we are at 2.7% of the target. But I think what we, with the stance that we take, is that the target is 2%, but we don't really confine ourselves to 2%. If there is a candidate and we are on 2%, because we believe that we should be able to target more in terms of the disability within our organization. We also highlight the racial segregation of our staff. And one of the things that we would like to highlight there, whenever there is a vacancy, the HR always provides the section consent with this equity status, so that it assists us in balancing the areas that we're battling with. In terms of the targets, Chairperson, I think I did indicate that I will only zoom in on the deviations, because you will see that in the 41 targets that we had, 36% of 36 of those targets were met on time, and we only had about 5 of the delayed ones. And I think if one is to go into the first one under content processing and dissemination, where there was a deviation, that deviation is around the radio program. Chairperson, we have a radio program which we do in partnership with all the 65 community radio stations. And we encourage, it's a resource that we provide to all government departments to get them to come and communicate with the respective communities in across the country, because the 65 radio stations that we have are spread throughout the country. The reason we had a bit of a delay, because that target is based on the targets that we had achieved in the previous year. This year was a slightly different year, Chairperson, because it was a transition of the last fifth administration and the move to the sixth administration. So there were some of the targeted projects that had to be postponed. But what we are happy to say is that one of the flagship programs that we do is the program that we call Let's Talk Justice. It's in all the in the 65 community radio station from 6 to 7. It has commenced, I think it commenced last week, and I think that process is also going ahead. But what is also pleasing is the new leadership in the executive. More of the ministers are buying into this program, which, by the way, when we conceptualized it in 2014, we conceptualized it as talk to your minister, because it was our view that at a local level we normally say talk to your mayor, but at national level we had conceptualized this program as talk to your minister. And the Minister of Justice or Ministry in the Justice Department has been very consistent throughout in having this program, and I think they've commenced with it again this year. The fourth area which has had a discrepancy is on intergovernmental stakeholder engagement, where we were off by 4. I think those 4 out they reside in the main in the engagements that we had in the with the communities, particularly in the Free State, because I think we did have some vacancies in the Free State, and we are currently in the process of filling those posts to make sure that we make up to the number of engagements that we have with communities at district level. The second discrepancy that we had under intergovernmental has been around the media engagement with cabinet outcomes. That process also, we were also off a bit, but I think we are back on track. The media briefings, the minister has, since he took office, I think she has had all of them, and he has engaged with all the issues that came out from the cabinet. The cluster media briefings, we also have been a little bit off, but I think with the new leadership, we are hoping also those cluster briefings, because we believe also they are a critical briefing in terms of going forward with what each cluster is doing. And I think those were the issues, Chairperson, that were a deviation and which I thought I would talk to. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mrs. Fumna. Honorable Somo. Floor, Honorable Soma, noted. Comrade Malay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and also thank you for the presentation. You know, my difficulty where I'm seated is that the Minister and the Acting DG have just preempted our issues, because even the issues that you requested them to talk to, they've already covered them, even on the slide, not just verbally, which for me, we are not here to praise each other, but also we must appreciate if they respond positively in terms of our issues. Having said that, Chair, I'm happy that you have broken down in terms of your workforce, as it were. But moving forward, one will really appreciate if your female demographics also also indicated. It's not just by the way, but one also will have much interest on that area. The other one, Ms. Pumla, that you talked to in terms of the slides also, it's whereby Or let me put it differently. How GCIA will make sure that the departments are taking you as a vehicle of choice in terms of communication in all forms, as it were. Because there's somewhere where you couldn't do your stakeholder management program because of other departments. Also, they think that they've got preference to not to use you, which for me, where I'm seated, I do have a challenge on that one. I must say that also what your departments have managed to do in the space of government in terms of communicating is to centralize the communication so that government speaks in one voice and there's a clear direction where the government seeks to go. The other one, which is not so important in terms of the report, but generally, Honorable Minister, if I may, through your good self, Chair, Honorable Chair, is that there's this thing that which I normally see and I ask myself that, are we as public representatives in the business of popularizing our faces, or communities must know the face of government? And I think we're moving towards that direction. I'm not going to unpack it deliberately. I'm just being general as possible because it also relates to all spheres of government. I'm raising that in respect of GCIS because its presence also is at the local government. And also, just to build up on that space in terms of local government, is to say GCIS in terms of Tucson centers, they are also tenants and also they are the key role player on that one, if we can pay attention. I know when last week when we were engaging with the DPSA, we raised that matter also that they must work closely with your good self to ensure that communication and bringing closer government to the community, also that gap is being closed, as it were. If you can play a critical role on that one, in terms of also respecting the different languages of different areas, as it were, as well. I'm not saying that you're not doing that by paying more attention to that, so that the communication tools and also the language that is being used, it's user-friendly for the communities, as it were. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Manelli.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also join Honorable Som in welcoming the report. But just to follow up on one or two issues, I think whilst appreciating the 30 days on invoices payment, now I'm raising the question because there's also community radios that get involved, which are more your entrepreneurs at that level who are venturing in the field. That may be for the future. The report will also indicate the SMMEs that would have benefited. And I'm saying in this space in particular, it is the challenges that I experienced in terms of sustainability at the level of community radio stations and so on, so that we also see that there's investment going towards that line from the side of government. The other issue relates to the program one on administration, just from the point of financials again, that the norm will be 25% and you are at 26.3%. Right, I do understand that in the narrative you've indicated that there may be also programs where you've overdone yourself, so to say. But is there a measure in place just to ensure that by the end of the year itself would not get into a point where we may have to justify over expenditure and so on? So is there a plan in that regard? Which therefore says that probably in the report, I think for the future, we'll be interested in those areas. If there's over expenditure, at least an explanatory note that indicates what could be the reason and what could be the plan to recover that. Because I think the message, Chair, we should continuously send is that whilst we speed up services and all that, we still ensure that by the time the Auditor General comes back, we should be found on the right side of doing things. I just thought, Chair, I should raise those issues for now. Thanks.
Honorable Malatsi, then Honorable Clark would follow after Honorable Malatsi.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to establish, how do you hold your government communicators accountable, given that there are these different lines of reporting? If it's your head of communications, obviously they're still directly accountable to the HOD of that particular department. In the case of political spokespersons, to the ministry. But in instances where there is a departure from the ethos of your communications protocol, how do you hold them accountable? Because you have put in these processes in place of providing training for them to improve their capacity and all of that. And one of the key challenges in any communication environment is to make sure that there's coherence in terms of messaging, but also displaying the kind of attitude that is expected of communicators of a government. So how do you reconcile that with all these different layers of accountability? Thanks.
Honorable Glad.
Thank you, Chairperson. I note in the report that 92 marketing events for the Tusong program were held. You know, when we've seen in the committee, in reports that we've analyzed before, we've also noticed that those centers aren't performing optimally. And I would really request that the committee do an oversight on those centers, because I note that you have exceeded your target in terms of marketing, but the outcomes are definitely not in line with what your work is doing around this. And then also, just in terms of the staff complement, the vacancies, could you just tell me by when will those vacancies be filled? Thank you.
Response?
Thank you very much, honorable members. I will answer some, but I think I should have mentioned that I'm with my colleagues at the back. Michael will take the Tusong centers. And I think, let me try and respond to the ones, and then I think Tasneem can respond to some others. How do we make sure that the GCIS is taken seriously? Honorable members, we've never been so optimistic about how the government communication is going to be taken forward going forward. If I can just cite just the one example, this current minister who is sitting, when we were planning how we are going to make sure that we become foot soldiers of the message of government, one of the issues that he said, anything that comes to our table to be signed off must tell us how we are going to make sure the foot soldier in that district municipality is coherent enough to know what we are saying about national health insurance, to also know at national level what are the issues in that district. What he has indicated is that I want all of you to plan together and I want all of you to be briefed at one go. And I think we with that kind of a tone in the sixth administration, there is no doubt why we should not be able to hold everybody accountable and the minister driving force. The second area that we want to make sure that there will be that kind of coherence, one of the first engagements that we have done with the minister was to talk to the members of the media, because we believe they also are a very important stakeholder. He also set the tone that this is the breed of communicators that I'm going to lead, and I'm expecting them to serve you, whether comfortably or not uncomfortable. We believe that in itself also is going to give us that muscle. The third area, Chairperson, we have a communication policy that is meant to hold each and every government accountable, particularly the communicator. But what has been the challenge going forward is that most of the communicators are appointed and they sign performance agreement with their respective directors general. And with this policy in place that forces each and every communicator to be held accountable, when they deviate from that, when we even have a pool of service providers who provide the training, we're hoping that we will be able to write to the department to say, we have training, these are the norms and standards, we expect your communicator to behave in a particular manner, and we're hoping that the departments will assist us in making sure that they hold those officials who deviate from the communication standard accountable. The third area, other issue that was raised around the media buying. Chairperson, one of the things that has been a challenge for us is the procurement regime of government, which was not conducive to the media buying per se. And this has been always a problem area, because when you don't have the procurement regime to assist and to make it easier for departments to come to you, it becomes a bit difficult. At the moment, there is an engagement between the minister and the treasury to request them to address this area. Equally with the DPSA, there is some work that is being done to address the compliance, so that we begin to also empower the community radio, because I think one of the issues that minister has asked us to do when I zoom in on the community radio is that every procurement that we do per month, the minister has asked us to give an account of any deviation why we have not used the community media. And I think that will also help us to hold the media planners accountable, because if they have not used a certain percentage of their procurement for that specific month, we are also expected to account to the minister, because the minister can only unlock the challenges that we have if we report about them. So there is work that we are doing also to support the community media, because yes, we acknowledge that these community media were set up by us, because remember, in the early stages, the MDDA was an invention of this government. So when they've set up these entities, we have to support them. And I think there is work to try and assist in that regard. And I think the other issues that I've left out, overspending, indeed, Chairperson, we're very much alive to make sure that we keep to the targets that are prescribed and we do not overspend. And you will notice even in our presentation, we are not anticipating overspending or underspending, because we keep track on a monthly basis of how we spend. So I don't know, Michael?
Thank you so much, DG. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, thank you so much for the opportunity. And just on the Toussaint thing from both Honourable Members, we're very much alive to the Toussaint in its 20th birthday month, by the way. 20 years of the program this month. And I think just honourable members to be aware, what we've done is, it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all. So the overachievement relates to those centres of excellence. So where we've been having centres that are doing very well, we're actually increasing the marketing and the awareness to make sure that it becomes a positive momentum, so more people will use it. Yes, there are centres that are not doing well at all. There are centres that are falling beneath the required minimum standards for the centre. You can't go and market a centre when it's actually... And there are processes around how we need to start managing those centres, phasing them out, etc. And in terms of the earlier point, Honourable Member, we do work very closely with the DPSA on how we want to manage those centres that are not actually living up to the original standard of where they were set. So we do have a plan in place for that. And our bias has been to ensure we market the centres that are very viable. Obviously, over time, and there's a lot of work we've been doing, some of the centres set up 20 years ago have almost outlived their initial lifespan. So the nature of service access in those areas has changed over time. So there are some centres which actually got to the end of their life cycle. And we don't, obviously we can't market those in that way. But yes, we are very much alive to the challenges of the ones where we have problems. Just also in terms of the, although it's not in this report, Honourable Members, for this quarter, just to say that, as the DG was saying, we did also recently do a very good induction for a lot of the new MLOs and heads of communication, with a matter of ethics, the ethos of how government communicators do their work was quite clearly put across. So we do those inductions, and we have had the first one in the second quarter. Thanks.
Honorable Clark, Honorable Soma, and Malazi will conclude.
Chairperson and honorable members, I think the DG has covered most of the issues that were raised for my area. Maybe just the one issue about the language and whether the language is appropriate. And I think the one thing that we do do continuously at the GCI is constant research, including of the products and the platforms. So we have a segmentation model that we use as government, and we also make sure that our products speak to the different segments that we are targeting. So, for example, our news agency, the online one, one of the things that we found is that people at the higher end of the market, those who have access to, who read their news online, prefer it. And then with Vukuzenzele, we found that there's a different requirement. People want to see beneficiaries of government programs like themselves. So that's so then we tailor our language in that kind of way, I think, as the honorable member was asking. But also in terms of language diversity, we do make sure that we try to keep as much language diversity as possible to keep diversity alive. I think I'll stop there if there's any more questions. Thanks.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. With regard to by when are we going to fill the post like the honorable member asked, we are happy to say the minister has just lifted the moratorium on the filling of posts, and GCIS has got a turnaround of 2 months to fill the post. So we can safely say by the end of October we shall have filled those posts, and then the vacancy rate shall have dropped.
Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy that also the department is giving us a turnaround. But also, so that we don't, it's my main point now, we don't end up discussing other things which are not within the quarter that we are supposed to be looking at. To concur with the honorable member that raised that, we need a separate discussion and presentation on Tucson centers, the fourth Tucson centers generation, the legal home in terms of government of Tucson centers, and the financial capacity of the Tucson centers, because I get worried when it said that we only market those ones which are viable. But there's a lot of issues around Tucson centers. It's not simple as responding as like that. So I'm saying probably then with DPSA jointly with GCIS that they must come forward and present to us, because the selective, the Maponya Tucson Center and the other ones are not the same, and the reason is both legally and also in terms of the capacity and the current expected quality and the generation, as it were, as the time evolves. We haven't paid much attention as the oversight body, as it were, even government. So I just want to support, so to be also unpack areas that would of interest to the portfolio committee or myself, speaking for myself. Thank you so much, Chair.
Honorable Horn?
Thank you, Chair.
Clark, sorry.
I'm 100% covered by that. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable.
Thanks, Chair. It's just a brief follow-up to what Aspumla said in response to the issue with the communicators. That, I mean, I wanted a clear instance of a practical example. So in the case where there's perceived misconduct in terms of the comms protocol, are you saying that in terms of the current REN, you are limited to writing to the department and highlighting this was the misconduct in terms of what, and leaving all the other processes to that department to handle? Did I understand you properly in that case?
Thanks. I will actually cite the example before the current minister. We had a case of one communicator breached the code of conduct in terms of our communication policy and our social media code of conduct. The challenge we had, Chairperson, because their contracts are signed with their Director General, we don't have powers of writing to say we're instituting a disciplinary. The only thing we could do is to write a formal letter to the department to say, here is the clause that the person has breached. We request you to implement it. And I think the challenge over the years has been the leadership that assists us to take it forward. But yes, what we do, we write a formal letter and we say, because we do not have, in terms of labor relations, to charge a person. It has to be done by the relevant department. But in terms of keeping them on track, we do. And we even this training, we take the trouble to issue a tender and appoint a pool of service providers for training, and we encourage them to do the training. And we've even gone as far as getting the DPSA to put that section on social media, because that's where a lot of trouble comes. They've also included it in the code of conduct in terms of the public service regulation and conditions of employment. And we're hoping going forward we will be able to enforce it. Thanks.
Can we now get briefing from Brand South Africa?
Thank you so much, members and colleagues. It's over to you, Brand SA. If the minister wishes to say something he might have omitted, he's mostly welcome, but you are now ready for the Brand SA presentation. Thank you. Brand SA, yes.
Thank you. It's Brand SA. Thank you.
thank you very much. Chairperson, members, minister, colleagues, I'll quickly run through the Q1 presentation from Brand South Africa. And with me, I do have colleagues, Bumi Mabuza on my right, who is the GM stakeholder, but today she's wearing the hat of acting chief marketing officer. I also have our CFO, Mr. Kumoto Seripe, if there are finance-related questions. Please raise a hand so they can see. There are a lot of people behind me. And also Dr. Krishni, we call her Dr. K, responsible for corporate services. She's the director of corporate services. Our presentation will touch on, I will also not be reading line by line because this presentation was circulated, but I will run through it very, very, very quickly. It will touch on the Q1 performance overview, the targets that were not achieved, and also the reasons why those specific targets were not achieved, and also the performance against the Q1 target, and then the normal human resources, and the last one we will end with the finances. the Q1 performance for Brent South Africa top 100%, 92 achieved and 8% not achieved. And this 8% I will then later on explain why this 8% was not achieved. On Q1, program 1, we had 3 targets. We achieved 1 out of 3. Program 2, which is brand marketing and reputation management, we 16 targets, all 16 achieved. Program 3, which is stakeholder relationship, we had 5 targets and all 5 achieved, and in total it was 22 out of 24. Where I have 2 slides on the not achieved, which I'll run through quickly. It is mainly in the finance area, because it was the issue of, we said our target was to get a satisfactory internal audit and AG report on internal control. That was the target, and the actual performance in that specific area was the issue of your internal audit did not conduct the audit in the quarter, and also the various essentials that there was a misalignment of the audit plans and the quarterly targets. But mainly in the finance also you will see that also on the target of the 5% variance on budget versus expenditure, we are explaining to say what was the variance there, that the actual expenditure is 23% behind budget. And also another issue in finance was the issue of your, we said on the target, the actual target was that the strategic objective was the sound internal control and good governance, and also that the annual target of the unqualified audit opinion on the financial information, and that we report at the end of the financial year. But mainly why in finance, so that I run through the slide, is that we, like Minister had said in the beginning, we had a CFO that was suspended and subsequently found by the committee to have erred in whatever that has happened, and some of us were not there, but finally the sanction was dismissal, which Minister has explained that it's going to serve the new board. But the issue here is that is the capacity in finance, capacity in terms of human resources. We have the acting CFO with really junior people that are there in finance, and most of them are, it's contract and intern. So there is a problem of capacity in the finance space. But another issue that we have in finance is that there was a system that was used previously, and just in the middle of the reporting year, that particular system, there was a decision by the previous board and the CFO to say that particular system be now be changed to a new reporting system. So most of the information which was in the old system and the new system, and but all that, it boils down to the issue of the capacity. And also on performance again, on Q1 here, on the enhanced understanding of the nation brand, this is about just the nation brand itself. This is where we have exceeded the target, and because we have exceeded the target due to earlier release of the Press Freedom Index than it was expected. But I need to mention here also that South Africa ranking in 2019 here dropped with 3 positions. 31, we got 31 out of 180 from 28, because we were in 2018, we were in the 28th position on the Press Freedom Index. On the, we also said we will deliver in Q1 4 South African incorporated research analysis report that was done. We met the target. We also said we are going to have 4 quarterly domestic perception research conducted. We met that particular target. So all these targets for Q1 under this particular goal of proactive and coordinated reputation management of the nation brand were met and exceeded in some instances. There is a program that we have that is called Play Your Part, which I explained the last time we were here, where we encourage all South Africans to play their part in respective fields. And in that particular program, we said for Q1, we're going to have 9 Play Your Part activities that we will implement. And we were able to, I mean, for Q1, we were going to do 3 provincial PYP activities that we're going to implement, and we're able to implement those planned activities. And also, in the next slide, the 10 activations utilized to promote constitutional awareness. We said for Q1 we're going to have 2 activations that to utilize to promote the constitutional awareness, and the target was met because we were able to do the Freedom Month activation in Gauteng, and also we're able to do the Africa Month activation also in Gauteng. Then we also promised that we will do 16 marketing platforms that will utilize for constitutional awareness. And in Q1, we said we're going to do 4. We managed to do all 4 marketing platforms we utilized to promote constitutional awareness. The target was met. We used the TV platform, which was your SuperSport, DSTV, and Mzansi, and also the out-of-home platform promoting constitutional awareness through taxi TV screens, and also the platform, print platform targeting school learners and anchored under the pillar right to vote, and also we used our digital platform. We also promised that we will have as an annual target 100 positive communication content pieces published. Because that is, we are about that when we say we need to publish so that we can be known and sell South Africa, have that good story to tell. But for Q1, we said out of the 100, for Q1 we'll have 25 of planned positive communication content pieces published, and in Q1 we were able to exceed that, we're able to have that 25 planned positive communication content pieces. We also said we're going to have the 5% increase in users who engage with Brand South Africa content on its digital platform. We are saying there if there is we are saying not applicable, but through the engagement that we had with the minister, we are going to correct that moving forward, because in Q2 the target will be reviewed to include quarterly split to say what is it that will be happening per quarter for us to reach the annual target. But also in Q1, we saw an 8% increase in user engagement on digital platform as compared to the previous quarter. But we will be able to, we will correct that moving forward, because there is a process. You don't just in the middle of reporting change the quarterly target. But as we go and meet now, as a team, we will be able to then, every quarter, there won't be any applicable, not applicable, but every quarter when there is an annual target, we will then per quarter be able to say what will be happening in that particular quarter. And then the next one, we said for annual target, we'll have 11 implemented media engagement activities to strengthen the relations and liaison with the media. And we said for Q1, we're going to have 2. Yes, we did have the 2. Media engagement. One was the baseline first media tour, and the second one was the annual Africa Communication Week, and the target was met. And then the next one is we said for this quarter 12 international platforms utilized to promote the nation's brand, and we are going to have 2 for this quarter, and we exceeded, we had 3. We had the flag bearer campaign, and also we had the CEO Know You campaign, and we also have the promoting the nation brand on SA Rugby and SA Cricket Online magazine. And the CEO Know campaign, if I may remind, is the one where we get all those CEOs outside the country, those who are investing in South Africa, we so that they can talk about their experience, what they have achieved, and how they have assisted us in growing the economy. By so doing, the other people out there who are also interested in investing in the country, they are also encouraged to do so. So we use that. It's called the CEO's Note campaign. Then we also said in this quarter we'll have four PYP domestic, PYP is Play Your Part, PYP domestic platform utilized to promote the nation brand. We exceeded the target, we had six. And also the two nation brand alignment training workshop that we're going to implement, target was met. We went to Northwest for training, and also we trained with the Department of Defense. It's called the Aerospace Maritime and Defense Training in Gauteng Province. And the next one was also to leverage of the one stakeholder-led platform to deliver the nation brand alignment training. We did that, and the target was met. We had won the Decisions Fruit Development Chamber Annual General Meeting, and also the city of Johannesburg. The next one, we said we're going to have 125 new users on market portal. We exceeded the target because we had 135 new users who were able to see, because as they log in, we are able to see they get registered. We also promised to have 15 PYP ambassador engagement in promoting the nation brand, because we have a lot of ambassadors. There are about 300 and something ambassadors that we have, but for the quarter, we needed to have 15 ambassador engagement, and we were able to have those 15 PYP ambassador engagement implemented. And this is where we use our ambassadors. I'm not going to read because it is there, but as an example, your Youth Economic Alliance promoting entrepreneurship, your public figure film, it's in the creative space, and also you Sunday Times Generations Next, which was held at the ICC in Sandton, and also the Mandela Washington Fellows and the Josie Cats Rugby Club. And also we had we promised to have three GSA activation, which is your Global South African Activation, and the target was met. We had those three GSA activations were implemented. One was in France, one was in the UK, and one was in the US. So we met the target. We also had, we promised to deliver four coordinated activities implemented in partnership with the private sector. The target was met. We have listed the Rally to Read Back to School campaign, the Business Association Roundtable, SMME engagement with Growth Supplier Northwest, and also there was another one, the SMME for Mpumalanga, because we said we're going to have four. Then, they are there, the WTM Africa Tourism Investment Summit, the SMME engagement with Growth Supplier Mpumalanga, and also the Sustainability Week. Then we also promised to deliver four coordinated activities that were implemented in partnership with state institutions, stakeholders. Target was met. We did the Africa Travel in Durban with your Department of Tourism. Also the Road Safety Collaboration, which we did with the Department of Transport. Also the Basha Uhuru Freedom Festival. Investment promotion in collaboration with the Gauteng Industrial Development Zone. We also promised to deliver the three coordinated activities implemented in partnership with civil society. As you can see that I'm dealing with the stakeholders, because we've got business, civil society, and government. Now I'm dealing with the civil society. What we delivered, the Thabo Mbeki Annual Lecture, the Eastern Cape Education Training and Career Guidance Expo, University of Fort Hare Intergenerational Dialogue, and also the Nation Building Youth Day Dialogue. Target was exceeded. Instead of three, we did four. Then we also promised to deliver four in-market activities implemented, and those are the activities, your Inala, Zulu Ballet, a Peacock Theatre that was done in London, We also did a roundtable discussion on 4IR with Minister Stella Ndabeni Abrams in the U.S., because what we do here specifically is that if there is a minister from any department that is going to the U.S., or to the U.K. where we are present, and there is a program that they are going to do, we are able to activate our people that are there to assist those ministers, even the president, to be able to deliver on whatever program that they are going there for. South Africa Chamber of Commerce Awards, we did that in the U.K. We also did the South Africa-Nigeria Investment Conference. This one was done in South Africa. And also we were going to have one activity implemented at the strategic platform that will secure speaking platform at other relevant international strategic events. When we are able to identify strategic events that will profile South Africa, we make sure that we then partner and collaborate with them so that we can be able to get an opportunity to market South Africa. And we did that at the Team South Africa program at the G20 summit, where we arranged with the CEOs that attended and the president engaged and addressed them. Under human resources, very quickly, is the gender diversity of Brand South Africa workforce for Q1. It shows that for females, we are at 66.67%, and more male, 33.33%, and in terms of the workforce, black 91%, white 4%, colored 2%, Indian 2%, people living with disability 2%. And the gender at Brand South Africa, the red, it shows Indian, which is for demographic composition of Brand South Africa, the executive management team, executive management team ethnicity, and 20% Indian, and then 80% black. This is at executive. And gender, we are 60% female and 40% male. The vacancy rate, as it stands now at Brand South Africa, it is at 14%. And the reason is that because of the moratorium, I know that it sounds like an old song, but we have, subsequently to that, we have advertised positions, and we will continue to do so. And the positions that we can fill at our level, we will proceed, but there will be those positions that can be dealt with by the board. Like Minister has said, I'm sure in the next 2 weeks or so, we might be having a board, and the board will then consider those positions. So the 14% will definitely go down to the manageable level. And the last slide that I have is our budget versus the expenditure to date for Q1. For brand marketing, 22M, actual was 16. The variance is 5M and is 26%, and the reason for that is that the delay in the conclusion of the media partnerships and the digital tender, as well as the cancellation of the investor perception tender. And also for stakeholder relations, 1M, and we to date use 900,000 and 3%. Also there, the variance explanation is the timing difference of projects activated in June. And for administration, 23M, use 19M, the variance is 4M, and in terms of percentage is 19%, and the reason there is the vacancies, and also, most importantly, is the salary increases not concluded. That is still outstanding because we are waiting for the board. So what do? We wait for the public service. When they are done with the negotiations at the PSCBC, and whatever that they pay the normal the public servants is what we also at Brand South Africa, we use that percentage. But for us to be able to implement that, we must finalize the paperwork and go to the board to say this is the percentage. But because we don't have a board, we are done with the paperwork, because as you can see, all the public servants are paid from level 1 to 12 plus SMS. They've just been paid recently in last month, but we are unable to effect that because we need the board to do so. Colleagues are waiting. We are actually owing them, because by the time we pay them, they will have accumulated. Plus also, another thing that caused the underspending is the issue of the outstanding audit billing. And the total, the budget 47 and actual 36 and variance 10M and 23%. I thank you.
Thank you. The presentation is open for discussion. Honorable Maneli, Honorable Nosoma.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation again. Just a few points to raise. Maybe starting with the earlier point I raised in the other presentation. Again, on the finances, just for consistency. That the part about SMMEs, because I see you going to a number of sites that you went to engage, especially the engagement with different stakeholders, how SMMEs would have benefited and whether those would have been processed within time. But as I said, the part that relates to the path to clean audits, I think gets to be important, which is therefore linked to the next question. On page, I'm linking page 7 and page 10, that there is a cancellation of the investor perception study. And then that's on page 7. Then when you look at page 10 on the IMD World Competitiveness Report, part of what you use that for is also about the foreign direct investment. Now the question would be, if that report or that survey could not be done, how important is that linked to that point? Now you'll also understand that the question is also based on the quota under review. That's a quota also where you had leadership that would be coming in, and therefore the perception of the world in terms of how they would look to invest in the country becomes, I think, important in that regard. On page 11, there is an issue, or slide 11, there's an issue raised there about the supply chain issues. If I may just go back to that, so that right. Yes, that's 3.4. The tender was cancelled due to supply chain matters, and then there's been a request to go out and re-advertise. Yeah, so when you read it like that, you don't get to know what the issues are. Now, as I say, I'm building up to the same questions that relates to us getting into a particular part of showing a good governance. Yeah, maybe the other issue would relate to the deviations that you also spoke to, as it relates to the audit. I do see that you are saying there's a plan to look at the second quarter to do two audits at the home. I think the question then that would remain would be, if it could not be done in the first quarter, now in the second quarter you have to do two of those. I'm just raising it from a point of the controls that have been raised, because if we do not put our eye on it, you can get to a point where by the end of the financial year we are sitting with problems. I think there's a need to explain that point, whether it's a capacity issue whether it was purely a planning issue, because it raises the other issue of misalignment. Because you would think that at the time of planning, those issues would have been looked at so that we do not miss such important deadlines. Maybe the last 2 points, Chair, maybe on 14 and 15, I'm not sure whether it's probably misprint or what's there. Because target is met, but you had 25 and you actually did 21. And when you get to variation, it's not applicable in that regard. So if you can just explain that point. I'm also worried on page 16 on the digital platforms. But there was no specific allocation in terms of how your performance will be measured, in terms of how the number of users and so on. And then you say in the next quarter, you then say in the next quarter there would be a split. But already they have missed the first quarter to look at that. As I say, the question that then remains, because at this point in time, that's the platforms that get used mostly, especially by the white generation. So what does that mean? Was it probably from a planning point of view that this was an option, or what could be the real issue? So that at least we know going forward what exact interventions are needed to address such issues. That's my submission, Chair. Thanks.
Honorable Osama.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me, so that I'm being consistent here, to positively appreciate the presentation, first. And secondly, to say Honorable Maneli have just covered my viewpoint that I wanted to raise, so I won't repeat them. Safe to say, on the audit report, I think that's what I must... not necessarily brand SA, through Honorable Minister, to say if you can explore and look at the possibilities or lobby government, and I'm sure it will be through Treasury, to say how is it not possible to align the impact results and the AG's report as it were, because it makes it difficult when you are looking at the incoming financial year as an oversight body to make sure there's an alignment, because the impact results, they come the year after, which they don't add value for you moving forward with their oversight role in terms of compliance and the related matters as it were, Chair. So the usefulness of alignment, if it can be looked at. Three, which is a matter of interest, this one. How do the ambassadors get identified or recruited in all sectors? I don't want to refer to the young South Africans as it way. Just for them, probably can send us in writing that one, because it's not part of the quarter under review. In terms of the workforce as well, to say that I did raise it earlier on, but I will repeat it, Chair. I'm happy when we break down the demographics of our workforce. I am, or we are still going to be interested to know the demographics of females in particular and the levels thereof. But also when we are dealing with that moving forward, when you recruit, also be mindful of the demographic figures as it were and their workforce. I'm general as possible, and DPME can also assist in terms of monitoring that across all government departments, because sometimes we lose sight, there's no balance in terms of that from where I'm seated, Chairperson. And I'm sure in terms of the filling of vacancies, noting that the Honourable Minister have covered that one in your good service, to say you are also going to observe and respect the expected turnaround in terms of filling of those vacancies.
Chair, I think Honorable Maneli have covered the points that I wanted to raise. Let me just check on my notes here, Chair, quickly. My apology for the delay on that. The other one, Chair, which I would like to talk to, which is my last point, is it in line with PFMA and internal controls, as it were? What can be done, Brent SA, that to avoid the misalignment of audit plans and the quarterly reports, as it were? It's more or less the same question, but I've just put it differently. Thank you so much, Chair.
Responses? I don't see other members wanting to raise questions. That's why I'm allowing you to respond to the questions that have already been asked thus far.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. On the colleagues will answer on the specific areas where I have left, like the CFO on the issue of the audits and the issue of the SMMEs, how do they benefit and repay on time. We are very clear and strict on that one, that wherever we go, when we do all the play your part, we collaborate with the local people and we make sure that we use the local people. But above all, we also make sure that we also, like all other departments, we observe the 30-day payment. And I can clearly report that all the valid invoices, when I say valid, because invoices, I'm using the word valid, capital letters, and I'm bolding it deliberately, because if it is not, if there are issues with treasury, the banking, whatever details, for me, that is not valid, or they are disputes, but the ones that are straightforward, we make sure that within 30 days or even less, we are able to pay. And also, there is a question on the cancellation of the investor, to say we are not giving more details. We, in the process itself, we realized that there were issues that supply chain was, in terms of compliance, we're going to have issues if we had proceeded with that one. So this was the decision that I have to take to say we needed to cancel and we will re-advertise it. But the Mpumi will expand on that in terms of linking with the work that has been done in the following slides to say how important that is and how has the cancellation impacted on that particular one. And also the issue of target met, on yes, they are met. It's not 21, Honourable Member, it is 25. It continues. If you check, it shows its page. Yes, on page 15, it does show the global markets, because we have, so if you check on page 15, it continues and say 22, 23, 24, 25, the global markets. So that is also part of that. So that particular target is met. And there is another question that I will answer on the issue of us talking to Treasury and assisting us, lobbying other government through Treasury to help us on the issue of the alignment. That is what we are doing. We work very closely with them because we are very thin on the ground. We really rely on other departments and also on National Treasury to assist us. How do these ambassadors get identified? That question was here last time. Again, today, this question is coming again. Ambassadors, some of them, we identify them, like when we know, we see in the news somebody doing something that is of interest and we see it is promoting the country, we are immediately able to identify that particular person and approach them. But we then vet them to make sure that they are fine. We will not, when we announce that person is an ambassador, have come back to say this person has done A, B, C, and D. But, yes, to find that the person doesn't pay tax, the person is a delinquent in areas. So we check you, then we make you an ambassador. Other ambassadors that you are not aware of, because we will not be able to be all over, somebody will come to us. We get others, we take others, we look at, you know, and they are at different levels. Others are high up there, but so that we do not discourage those that, you know, are just starting, we are then able to have at all different levels. But other people approach us and say, you know, in KZN, there is a person that we know deep in rural areas that does A, B, C, and D. The person will get a surprise call from us. We go and see what they do, and we assist them putting them in our platforms, by making sure that they get known, and also hooking them up with people who will be able to assist them. They become our ambassadors. But we watch you very closely. Should it happen that you do something that will not represent us, we immediately, on the spot, we are able to. And these ambassadors are not like your ambassadors, as in, you know, in China, like your real ambassadors appointed by the president. These ones, at my level, are brand ambassadors. So you carry the flag of South Africa. So whatever that you do, people look at you to say, oh, is this how South Africans behave? So we are very clear as to who do we bring into our books. I've just compiled a report which I will be submitting to the minister and deputy minister on who are our ambassadors. We do not pay the ambassadors. We collaborate with the ambassadors, but we do not pay them. So there is no ambassador who gets any salary, minister, from Brand SA, but we collaborate with them in the work that they do. And also, Dr. K, we have noted the issue of the workforce, that the demographics, we need to be sensitive, but we need to also be able to say the numbers and make sure that the issues of the females, we put it to the fore to say we. But I must say that at Brand SA currently, we do not have that problem. But later on, as we come back to report, we'll be able to show those figures. Filling of vacancies and the turnaround time, we are observing it also with Brand SA. It's actually even much quicker. It was just a matter of we have advertised, and those that we have advertised, like I've said, will be able in a month or so to be able to fill the vacancies. So the 14% will go down. May I request Bumi to take the just 2-3 points that have something to do with marketing and stakeholder. And then the CFO will deal with finances. And Dr. K, if you want to add anything.
Thank you, CEO. Honourable members, if I can just outline or explain a little bit further the difference between the IMD World Competitiveness Report and the Investor Perception Study that we do as Brand SA. So Brand South Africa takes an eclectic approach in painting a picture of the nation brand. So we source content and information from various bodies that do research, like World Economic Forum and the IMD. And this gives us a picture of perceptions of the country. Definitely, it is used as a tool for investors when they assess and the opportunities for investment in South Africa. But the investor perception studies allows us to engage directly with investors and ask more in-depth questions. So we target, from last year, about 16 different markets. We pose specific questions, understand a bit deeper what the constraints are that they see, what opportunities that they see. And we do the investor perception studies in consultation, for instance, with the DTI and InvestSA, in looking at the markets that are key, in looking at the profile and the sectors that we are trying to boost in terms of investments. So it gives us a more in-depth picture that the research reports that other bodies do, that do annually and is available, does not give us. And that's on the one point. I hope I've answered that. And then in relation to the points on page 16 and the targeting regarding the 5% annual target, a point definitely noted, it's a point that was raised by the minister, and that's why you've put that point. So our targeting looked at an annual figure. And the reason, our rationale at the time was that by the time the end of each quarter is different depending on what's going on in the market. So you'll find around the last quarter, for instance, or the transition between the December period and January period, there's a downtime. So we looked at the collective figure, but we can definitely look at a comparison quarter to quarter from the previous year and also outline a total figure for the year. It's possible to do, and that's what we aim to do and correct next quarter. Thank you.
Okay.
Chairperson, just to add then that with regards to the emphasis on females, that point is noted, and in our next quarter report and presentation, the committee will find that we place additional emphasis on this, particularly with regards to the ratio of females to males and the interventions to develop females within the organization. It's already there, it's just information that needs to be escalated into the quarterly report and also into our presentation. We'll also be adding the work that we do for internships within the organization that will also come through in the next report. Thank you.
CFO, on the issue of the audits and the alignment, and also that issue of us doing two audits for the next quarter.
Okay. Good morning, honorable members. With the issue of the internal audit, we actually now have identified that it was an issue of planning of the internal audit plan since it's outsourced. So we have rectified that issue going forward. So we'll make sure that going forward we don't actually encounter the same problem. But however, the audit becomes cumulative because they look from the 1st of April, and us as well, the issues have been raised by AG if they have been addressed as well. And secondly, is the issue of that you raised of 3.4 of the domestic perception study versus the international perception study. So what we've reported is not the variance is the international perception study. Under 3.4, it is a domestic perception study, which is a different research altogether. So we didn't have the target for the international perception study in quarter one. Hence, you'll find that there is no target that has not been met, per se. And also as well that we have actually embarked on the what we call a continuous type of audit, which each and every quarter that the internal audit will come in and just making sure that to look at if our controls are sound before we report on that particular quarter.
Honorable Minister Mtembo, welcome, Deputy Minister. You are welcome back to the meeting. We were aware that you were held up in another meeting. Welcome.
She was held up in a cabinet committee meeting, and which I have been missing from. So she held the fort there. So we should thank her. Chair, why we did not do well in terms of audit outcomes in the first quarter was precisely because we do not have an internal person responsible for audit controls. That's it. Simple. It doesn't need you to be a scientific guru to see why we did not do well. When you don't have the requisite capacity in that area of work, definitely you will not be able to do well to take the necessary measures of controls. So though you might have, as the colleagues have said to us, you might have external independent auditors that come from time, but it's better if those auditors come assisted by a full-time audit person. I just hope that in their interventions next time, they will write, appoint a full-time audit person. Hopefully, they will write that, Chair. Hopefully.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Can we now get presentation by Media Development and Diversity Agency?
Whilst MDDA is coming and taking to the table, well, one issue that as a country we must be looking at is in this area of promoting the country, in this area of wanting people to visit the country, bombarding people everywhere in the world to visit and even to invest, whether we should not be duplicating in this area of work. It's something that we are looking into, my leaders, members of parliament, so that you don't have duplication, you don't have structures in government that duplicate in this area of work. So we will come back to you in due course. I would like to mention other structures, but in due course we will come back to you and say what is our take as government on what we perceive to be duplication in this area of work.
Good afternoon, Honorable Chairperson. Can I?
Thank you. You can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon to the members in the House, Honorable Minister and Deputy Minister and my colleagues. It's not going to be a long one for me because we're not reporting on a lot. Usis Pumla came here and said that her mandate is derived from the Constitution and with the purpose to disseminate information to the people of South Africa so that they can improve their lives. The MDDA is an original baby of the of GCIS, then takes it further and say, we would like to communicate with South Africans in the languages that they speak and they understand. And for that reason, we then support and encourage access to and ownership of the media by the previously historically disadvantaged groups, and we focus on diminished languages so that South Africans do access information and diversified news in the languages that they speak and they understand. Part of our mandate as the MDDA is to also encourage development of human resources and training, capacity building, and encourage channeling of resources to the community media sectors, and I will explain how we do that. Another area that we'd like to focus on is the support of initiatives that promote literacy and the culture of reading, and particularly we're looking at children's programs. In support of what the president of the country has said, that for children in grade 4 to read, to understand, the MDDA would like to play part in that. I'm not going to go through the visions and the missions, but safe to say that the MDDA implements its mandate through 5 programs, the first one being the governance and administration. And if I go through the achievements, you'll note that we did not have targets or quota 1 targets under that branch. And in branch 2 as well, which is grant and seed funding, we also did not have targets for quota 1 in that program. And the reason for that one, because grant and seed funding is the core business of the MDDA. However, we then decided in quota 4 that we should perhaps relook the method that we've been using to accept or receive applications for grant funding at the MDDA, and we then developed the first grant funding policy of the MDDA in quota 4. And because of the issues with the board sometimes not correcting, that policy only got approved in July. So we didn't have targets that relate to projects funding in quota 1. And we then opened in August until the 6th of October, we opened for new applications. This is after we'd done an assessment and we took stock of the backlog that we had and realized that we were going to take time to go through it. But besides, we were sitting with a backlog on both sides, print and broadcast, of applications that had been lying dormant in the pool since 2010. And some 2008, and it was worth more than 800 million. And then we decided that let's get rid of this, let's write back to all the people that had applied, because we did not know whether those applications were still relevant, are the people still in business, are the earnings still the same as that applied some 10 years ago. So we made the decision to eliminate that and start from scratch. And as of today, I was told, I think yesterday, that the applications were 14. However, there are structures like SACRO, your South African Community Radio Organization, that have come to us to say, you must expect applications from us, for we assisting our members to actually do application, to compile applications that will be compliant with your needs. So we're not worried about the slow start, and we do have some time as well. The other program, which is the third program, is partnerships, public awareness and advocacy. Also, we didn't have a target there. However, I think from the second quarter, we had then started meeting with different partners and stakeholders to try and create a pool of resources that will enable the MDDA to create a conducive environment for the community media and develop and diversity, as our name says. The other program, which is program four, is capacity building and sector development, and that is where the other target that has been achieved is. If I go back to the presentation, the minister has already spoken to the vacancy rate. We're currently sitting at about over 30% because it is 12 vacancies that are available, that are vacant out of 39 people in the establishment. We also do talk about the demand in terms of the financial environment, and that is the reason why we've gone out to look for partnerships. We've met CEDA, we've meeting with the mainstream print media, we've met with the three telecommunications companies, your Vodacoms, your MTNs. We're meeting a lot of people this year so that we then look at the needs, and I know that we're doing it the other way around, that we should have taken stock first before we then create this pool. But I think we're just running against time. If you look at my presentation, we do talk about the demand for MDDA support, and with the little that we have from government, we get about 31.7 million per annum. And you can see there that there's a historical debt by the sector arising from Centec. Centec, currently we owe about 50, 51 million. There's SAMRO fees there, there's CAPASO, there's SARS, and so forth, with a historical debt adding up to 180 million. Technological and environment, we're saying there that the MDDA Act at the moment, and in fact I think that is supported by the fact that also ICASA is the regulator, currently does not have a framework or legislative framework that regulates digital or digital broadcasting. So we'll take you from ICASA on that one, but we're beginning to say that one of the major requirements, if you are in a project or a broadcast enterprise, community TV, community radio stations, and you'd like to get support from the MDDA, that the first requirement we'll ask of you is a broadcast license. And the digital space, therefore, or the act, therefore, needs to talk to the technological advancement and developments that have happened in the country. Corporate governance, I think we are on track there. We have updated a lot of policies in quarter four. We continue to do that. There's some that I think are still outstanding to go to the board because we just get... we've got challenges with the board. If I quickly take you through the vacancies, we're saying that we've got 27 positions filled. Number of vacancies, we've spoken to that. There's three secondments, and that's how we have largely been doing work in the broadcast area specifically, because you see as I go through the presentation that the executive for the project, which is called project director, is vacant. The broadcast manager is vacant. The one of the coordinators for broadcast is also vacant. And so in the two positions, the broadcast manager, not the executive one, I've got someone from the DOC who seconded, and I've got a project coordinator as well who seconded. The third secondment is me from the GCIS. Fixed terms, six, and five of those are actually just former interns. We've got two incapacitated managers. One is company secretary, one is the print manager. So I'm just trying to paint a picture of just the capacity that we have and need in that space, because it is core business. And we're saying that in terms of management vacancies, we've got five vacancies in that space of senior management out of the 13 managers. This structure, the red, will tell you that this is how the picture looks like. The red means vacancies, and the orange or yellow means that those people there also have had to be assisted by other people because they are incapacitated, so they're physically not in the building. In terms of the gender, female target 50%, we're sitting at 43%, male 50%, we're sitting at 35%, we're lagging behind there, but again, we've got a lot of vacancies, and so we are going to be filling the vacancies in accordance with the demographics that we need to achieve. And in terms of disability, we're sitting at 2.5%, slightly over there. And in total, in terms of race, Africans are targeted 75%, and we're sitting at 4.4% over, which is 79.9%. In terms of colors, the target is 9. We're sitting at 2.5%. We're lagging behind there. So is the Indians and the whites. We're supposed to be at 11, and we're sitting at 2.5 as well. And so we're lagging there, and we will take care of that when we fill the 12 positions that have been advertised. And then in terms of the board, the minister has already spoken to the 4 vacancies. In terms of the achievement, we're reporting 100% achievement. Remember that I've said that in quarter one we didn't do projects because of the new application process and the new policy. Those will be dealt with in quarter three and quarter four once we've received the new applications. But in terms of the 2 targets under program 2, number of monitoring reports produced on input and output and compliance to MDDA grant aid. Contract. The annual target there is 80, and in this quarter we targeted 10, and we have achieved the 10. And again, we jump to program 4, which is capacity, where we're saying that the annual target is of number of media literacy workshops is 3, and in quarter 1 we did 2 because we had planned for 2, so there's no variances in terms of those 2 targets, and that is the reason why we are reporting 100% achievement. In terms of quarter one. I've already spoken to the new grant funding policy and the application season that is opened. And I've already spoken to the fact that these are just highlights from quarter one as well, which were not targeted for as well, to say that we have concluded a contract. It's a matter of both boards signing. But MultiChoice has pledged another 40 million over the next 3 years as MDDA support. And we have, in quarter one, in fact, met, we are, and we continue to meet with some of the commercial broadcasters that are not paying their USAF levies towards the MDDA, but paying elsewhere. That is just to allow us, again, it is in our quest to increase our baseline budget when we do that. Our print funders, we've met with Media 24, Kexton, Independent Media, and I think others we've even met twice. Telecoms have spoken to the others, and we're just saying this year, partnerships. In terms of revenue, first, in terms of sources of funding for the MDDA is funded by the government. That is that 31.7%, and then we get the money largely from the commercial broadcasters, and then we also do investments, which then give us about 5.1 interest per annum. And so in 1920 financial year, the broadcasters have given us 32.1%, and year-to-date budget, sorry, I'm still in percentages. I apologize, Minister. I think it's 32.1 million. And we planned on using more than 8 million of that. However, because I think this is where program one and also program two, the seed funding is, we did not disperse a lot of that money because we only are going to do that in the last few quarters. So we only were dispersing the last few tranches from the previous financial years. In terms of grants income, which is the government, 31.7 million. We planned on spending 7.9 million, and we ended up spending. Sorry, it was dispersed to us. So we received that money from government, and it was the first tranche of the. It is the first tranche, which is quarter one tranche of the financial year. Then MDDA executive have been on course, so I've dealt with that. So total income for the financial year is 69 million, and we've already spent about 9.7 million, but we are lagging behind, obviously, because of the spend that is not much on there. So we'll catch up when we do adjudicate projects and we fund projects. Then the, in terms of the expenditure, 28.9 million, we budgeted on spending 48.8 million, and we ended up spending on grants expenditure 6.5 million, and we are lagging behind there. And then the MDDA board costs as well are also a little bit low, and it's because some of the board meetings could not take place because they were not correct. It is important, I think, to stress that the employee costs are rising. But however, there is some money that is not spent because of the vacancies. But in terms of the grant from government, we spend bulk of that amount actually goes into our employee costs, administration, the overheads, and so forth. So the lower spending, again, once the positions have been filled in terms of the staff matters, we will recover there. I've already spoken to the fact that we do have an investment account, and we do get about 5.1 million per annum. We actually moved the investment from APSA in the first quarter of the financial year. The board approved to the Reserve Bank so that we could get a higher interest rate because we do need that money for the operations. So these are the investment accounts. Going forward, I think it is for us is to say partnerships, because we know that the fiscal constraint, we're not likely to get more money from the state. That is why we're just creating this pool of resources. What else? Or the other thing that I think is important to note is the fact that we are talking to a Broadcast Research Council, which has considered or agreed with us that, in fact, the tool that they use for audience measurement or audio research is not really geared for the community media. And so we're going to be talking to them on whether we should partner with them, beef up what they have, or we must look for an alternative tool. In terms of the languages, we have been broadcasting and writing in terms of print in all official languages, but we are saying that we are also looking at prioritizing languages that include Klo and Kwe and the sign languages, but obviously we're going to have meetings with the PenSouth before we do that. There is a need for the details around the MOU we have with the Competition Commission to be concluded on that Economic Empowerment Development Fund that they'd actually given to the MDDA to implement or administer on their behalf, because at the moment it talks about largely bursaries that must be utilized for bursaries on media studies by black students or Africans. And we are beginning to say that why shouldn't they allow us to use that money to advance the mandate of the MDDA, most probably disperse it back to the community print, because it is community print that was unfairly by the Competition Commission. So we're beginning to conclude those details, because we signed the contract in 2017, I think, and it has not been implementable because we're just not agreeable with all the areas that they say the money must go to. Commercial broadcasters, yes, I've spoken to that, and the fact that the Act may need to be reviewed so that it's in line with what is happening, digital migration, technological advancements, and fourth industrial revolution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, MDDA. Members, that is open now for questions, deliberations. Honorable Malad.
Thanks, Chair. There is a slide in the presentation that talks about one of the interventions that you have instituted there around the percentage on government advertising spending, dedicating 30% of government advertising spending towards community media. I just want you to elaborate more on the mechanics of operationalizing that so that there is compliance across the board, both
flowing from national government into municipalities, and what are your engagements to make sure that this happens throughout the three spheres of government? Thank you.
Honorable Soma.
Chair, probably to build up on Honorable, let me start by appreciating, positively appreciating the presentation as it were. That's one. Two, to build up on Honorable Malazi in a different angle, to say that, do we have any monitoring capacity, mentorship tool in place to ensure that the organizations that we support materially and otherwise, they are moving forward financially, not necessarily self-sustainable, but financially sound as it may in terms of executing their core business, as it were. That's one, Chair. The other one, in terms of the financials in your presentation, I'm not too sure whether it's treasury language or financial language, the issue of surplus that we have used there, that while there are other areas that you need also to invest in, but also there's money that is there, that is sitting there. For me, I think you need to look at the wording thereof, because there is a financial sound reason why you have that reserve. I would call them reserves, not surplus per se, because you are not running a business to make profit as well. So if we can look at that, it could be much appreciated. But also in terms of your presentation, which is my third point, Chair, it seems like there has been a slow appetite of new radio stations and televisions application of organizations, as it were. What mechanism to market your products and your support and your legal mandate, as it were, in terms of electronic media, as it were, because you do have targets, but if because the public haven't responded to you, so you can't also spend that money, then which means there is a disjuncture in terms of communication and expectation, as it were. The other one, I'm sorry to jump now because I should have dealt with when I was dealing with also the monitoring one. The quality of the equipment that you assist the organizations also. I'm not saying there is a poor quality, because I'm not a quality expert, but I'm just saying that probably it needs to be looked at as well. What would be the other one, Chair? Let me just quickly go to my notes here, Chair. It's just that I'm using a smaller Nyana gadget now, because my iPad, the battery is flat. I'm sorry to do this, Chair. My apology. I'll try to be fast to scroll through. Yeah. Okay, but I must say on this one, in terms of the feeling of vacancies, I'm happy the introductory remarks made by the Honourable Minister and the commitment thereof, and I'm sure that then after that, the core business of MDDA will be smoothly executed, as it were. But also with the technology, if we can look at other ways of doing a business, as it were, it might help also. Even the electronic tools that you use also must be on par or up to date, as it were. I know it could be expensive, but it's better to invest now for future savings, as it were, in terms of the organizations that you support. Other than that, Chair, thank you so very much for the opportunity that you have provided me.
Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like some clarity in terms of the financial environment line item. It says sector's historical debt is 180 million. Could you just elaborate on that and just let me know what does that align to, so that I can understand the 180 million historical debt? And then just a comment. I'm surprised you're able to really function when I look at your staff structure and your vacant posts, as well as your incapacity. You know, I think it must put a huge strain on the department in order to function. And I'm happy to hear that the minister
is addressing this as an urgent concern. Thank you.
Responses?
Thank you, Honourable Member, for the question. I'm not alone. I'm with the CFO, Mr. Yasin Asmal, and I'm with the Acting Director for Strategy, so we will share the questions. On the 30% set aside, that's the question, Honourable Member. Is it? The enforcement of the 30%, I think the enforcement of the 30% is a bit of a challenge now. What we're doing is we're going around encouraging people rather, because there's no approved policy or legislation that enforces it currently. So what we do is we encourage people, we request people to assist us with the set-aside. But what we planned on doing is to go and meet with COGTA SALGA in as far as municipalities are concerned and GCIS to actually ensure that they also do make good with the 30% set-aside. But with the municipalities, the other thing that we're looking at requesting, and bearing in mind that the independence of the community media is important, but we find that other community radio stations get locked out. So we've got court cases where they get locked out because they owe rent to the landlord, and then our equipment can get confiscated, and we must go to court to get it back. And we found that where the rental is low, or they are renting in municipal buildings and so forth, or government buildings, that then the rental is low and they're able to pay the rent. But when it's very high, then they get into trouble most of the time. So we are also, and it's part of the pooling of the resources that will ease the burden on the community media as a whole, because print equally needs assistance like that. In terms of the M&E capacity and the financially sound viability of the community media sector, sustainability is actually the key. And it is a threat and a risk to the viability of the sector at large. And I will link it with the question that deals with the 180 million debt that they have found themselves owing so much, because there's just so much money takers from the sector. If they play music, they must pay SAMRO or SAMPRA. If they do business, they must be compliant with SARS, and there's Centec for broadcasters as well, which is a huge debt. That when a radio station is put in place and says I'm going to transmit to Centec, the first thing that they must pay is 450 or 500,000. In fact, if there's a challenge with where you are geographically, you end up with a 1 million upfront, like Herigwala and others, that you must pay the 1 million, especially now because Centec is saying we've reached our threshold in terms of risk management. We can no longer take on new radio stations without a payment. And upfront, yes. So what has happened previously, and this is what has caused this debt, is that if, for instance, they put a radio station, that connected that radio station in terms of transmission, 500,000 would get amortized over a period. And so remember now there's monthly payments and there's the amortized amount, and they just cannot. And because of the lack of revenue generation, and that is because of many reasons, but particularly because they are in rural areas, so there isn't much. So we encourage them to partner with Boxer, with the societies and so forth, but there isn't much that you can get from a rural area. I always make an example to say, I'm not sure how much if there was a radio station in Tofimvaba, where I'm from, and my parents are pensioners, and are expected to also contribute towards the sustainability. I'm not sure how that would have worked. So those are the challenges that they encounter, and that is why it is important for us to open other doors other than just relying on government. For instance, when we go to MTN and we say, others just need Wi-Fi, They just need Wi-Fi. Others are saying we would like to actually be online, but how do the people around us, because again they are in rural areas and the cost of data is high, how do they access us? And MTN and Vodacom say we can zero rate. If you choose some of your projects to pilot, we can zero rate an app for them or a website or a URL. So ours is to really then create that conducive environment for them to thrive. The CFO, for instance, if he speaks, he will say, we normally ask ourselves, how long should we be with a project in order for that project to break even? We're even looking at whether we shouldn't be taking this setup cost. When we approve for a new project, a startup, why don't we then as MTDA, in part of approving the equipment and other operational costs, why don't we absorb the setup cost so that the station is not burdened by this amortized amount, but that they can deal with the monthlies, and then we see who else we knock on the doors to open. So that is the issue, the big issue, the sustainability. Slow appetite and marketing our mandate, certainly we're supposed to be doing that at all times, but with the new application method and the new policy now, I think we are buying space from GCIS to be on the 65 radio stations. We were supposed to be on Morning Live DM there, I think, a week ago. So we're creating those platforms. We were also, I think, a week ago, we were at Power FM and so forth. So and we are on social media as well, and we wrote to all the people. So I think the applications are just low coming, but there is no shortage of people that are going to apply. Because if I'm saying for print only, we were sitting with 239 old applications, and in broadcast we were sitting with 81. And what has happened is ICASA has also lifted its moratorium on community radio. So I think there's going to be a great appetite with time. CFO, I'm going to ask you to take the financial question, please.
Thank you, Chair, Mr. Minister, Deputy Minister, and honorary members. The question regarding the reserves, Chair, this is more financial jargon, if I could say, in terms of process you need to apply for all your money that's in your bank account at the end of the financial year. It does not make reference to the fact that there's money that is committed. So as the CEO has spoken to, there's projects that have already been committed to, which is paid in tranches, so you pay in three or four tranches, but may have paid the first tranche and there's three tranches outstanding. So that is the money that we still retain, which we apply to the Treasury to say we retain it so that we can pay the next tranches going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Have your team members, all of them, answered that you have indicated they're going to provide answers? Because there's a follow-up question coming from Honorable Som. Honorable Som?
My apology, Chair. I should have asked this question in relation to multi-choice expired contract. That in between the expired contract and now, I note that moving forward, we're working on that. I'm raising this question in relation to, Chair, good acceptable governance standards, as it were, because we don't want to find ourselves wanting with the AG on that space. What is happening? Just give us a sense of comfort on that space. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. So in terms of the contract with the multi-choice, when they give us the 35 million last year, it was the end of the 3-year contract. So we then went and we renegotiated a new contract. And in terms of the amount, they have pledged 40 million. CFO, I think you said we'll get it in the second quarter, in the coming quarter. Yes. So that money is coming in. However, they paid us there. So now it's a matter of just physically signing the contract, which must be signed by both boards. But there's no gap. They gave us 35 million. It was 22 million the other year. They now are going to give us 40 million this year in the coming quarters. Thank you. Or it's the contract entails their contribution towards the MTDA. We must remember that the commercial broadcasters, through the USAF levy, then pay 0.2% of their annual turnover. So that is what they give us. But multi-choice is the largest funder of the MTDA, and they usually also give us what they call discretionary funding. But they've pledged the 40 million over the next 3 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Minister.
Chair, we, I think colleagues will know that how the legal framework for funding of community radio is structured is that you have these contributions that are prescribed in law by all broadcasters to MDDA. That's why in their finances you have monies that are coming from broadcasters, precisely so that MDDA as a transformative tool can then be able to fund community radio, community print, newspapers, and community TV, where we have not done very well, by the way. So because TV by its very nature is very expensive, even some TV, community TV that have been on the horizon, but soon they will not take off because of basically how much it needs for you to keep a TV station on air, the number of people and other inputs that goes with that. So far, I think we're proud of what Tswane TV, that is still on air, Cape Town TV, it's in and out of air, and others. But generally, you have over, as the acting CEO has said, over 200 community radio stations that they have supported, that they are supporting. Also, a number of community newspapers, again, what, about 200 or so. Also, community newspapers that they are supporting through this community initiative called MDDA. So this money then that comes from MultiChoice and other broadcasters is meant to assist MDDA to fulfill this objective of transforming and diversifying the media terrain in our country. Thanks, Jim.
Through you, Chair, I think there was just one question that I omitted from the Honourable Member on the quality of the equipment. I think our equipment is the best, actually. The last contract we had, and they are still installing now, it was 35 million. And I mean, I think the lowest in that quotation was 1.4 to install a studio or two studios per project. So it goes up maybe to 1.6, 1.9, they vary, but it is the state of the art because not only are we installing now, but we're installing equipment that is also digital ready. Yeah, it's also digital ready, even though we know that the radio is not urgent, but it is already digital ready. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are going to get a presentation now from DPME, but I want to make the meeting aware that we have serious time constraints. This presentation or the meeting as a whole must be over at 1:30, because at 2:00 there's another meeting in this venue. So we must not hold up the next meeting. Thank you very much. The presentation is bulky, Sisimbumi. Can you rush through without leaving important issues, of course?
And she's very good in doing that. That's why she came last. DJ Mbofu, because she's very good in summarizing.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, my honorable minister and deputy minister, colleagues who are here with us today. Thank you very much for the opportunity for us to come and present to you the work of the department in quarter one. May I just indicate that I am here with the Secretary of Planning, who is the Director General responsible for the National Planning Commission. Under this guise, Minister, we thought we may give him the opportunity to do the specific area that's covered by the National Planning Commission. It will take a few minutes, I'm certain. But we're also here with the Acting Chief Director of Strategic Management and the Directors of Strategic Management and HR, and supported largely by the ministerial staff and all of us who are here. Let me start, Honourable Chairperson, by indicating that we have made some minor changes in the presentation that was last sent to you, and the changes are really minor. We've swapped one slide in the sequence and shifted it to before another one. And then on slide 25, I'd like to draw your attention. We've just given, yes, the one that has been circulated now is...
Can I check that, if all honourable members have this? This is the version that is going to be presented now. Okay. Thank you. Continue, Mrs. Mbumi.
Thank you. On the other change is that on slide 25, there's just additional information about what we're doing in relation to the matter of 30 days payment in terms of action, which we've added. But those are the only really slight changes that have happened there. Honourable Chairperson, in order to take us through very quickly, we are going to provide you with a presentation of the five programs of the department from Program 1 to Program 5 for quarter 1, overall departmental performance, the HR information, and the financial performance. In the first one, overall performance has been 92%. Honourable Chairperson, I may indicate that we'll deal with the detail. We think maybe by quarter 4 that might tend to 96%. I'll explain why. There is a contestation here about how the figures are calculated, and we'll be able to indicate in detail. So we come with a 92% performance for the quarter, and that's primarily with two areas in the administration area that have not been achieved. The first one is the one that we think might look different later. We achieved 94% on SMS and 92% on MMS level in terms of the number of officials who did not submit financial disclosures. And that basically is the first target that was not achieved. The second one is our vacancy rate. We achieved 10.5% on average. In this quarter, we filled 20 posts, and out of them, two were filled by internal candidates. Now, it's very good for us to promote internal candidates to fill posts, but it creates a problem because it means the posts they vacate then become vacant and then we must fill them. So that is actually the contributory factor, but we're certain, for instance, if it had been filled by outside candidates, we would not be seeing this. We then have advertised for those posts, but we accept that we have to fast-track our recruitment processes and fill all the vacancies and ensure that for the newly created posts we are able to conclude our vacancies and fill all our staff. We will not highlight all the areas where we achieve our targets, Jefferson, in terms of time, but we think it's important for us to confirm that the department for the financial year 2018-2019, confirmed by the Auditor General at this point, has achieved its seventh consecutive clean audit. This will come to you when it comes in the form of the annual report that we'll table at the end of the month, and I'm sure we can discuss that in detail. But in essence, that's the good news from the auditors in terms of what we've been able to work with them and achieve in the quarter, because in fact we do the work with the AG in quarter one and do a significant amount. Secondly, in that one, in the next slide, we also talk to all the areas of achievement. Again, to note, quite important, the area of 100% of payment of valid invoices within 30 days. We initially set a target of 10 days at CPME. We now do it in 7 days. And that's a principal standard we're trying to set, but also to encourage others to try and achieve it. In the national planning coordination, I would just like to give an opportunity to the Secretary of Planning to cover that issue relating to the Planning Commission. I think we must constantly recognize
the separation between the department and the planning commission so that we are able to, so we don't want to assume otherwise. So I'd like to give the secretary the opportunity to just cover the National Planning Commission work, and then I'll proceed, Chair.
Secretary, you can take the platform.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, Minister and Deputy Minister. So, just as the Director General has indicated, we are the part of the department that supports a body of 25 independent commissioners who make up the National Planning Commission. They're appointed on their expertise in various disciplines to help with the country's long-term plans, principally the National Development Plan and how we continue to seek to promote it as our lodestar as we go forward as a country. Just to say that the current commission has been in place since 2015, and the most important thing to raise for this committee is that various pieces of research and stakeholder engagements that they have been undertaking have now become ripe for harvesting, for dissemination into the public space. And I would hope, Chairperson, that there would be an opportunity at some future point for the committee to do a deep dive on some of these products. And in the period under review, the last 3 months, two important products have come to fruition. The one is something of exceeding national priority, the water security framework, which is a comprehensive framework about how we secure water as a resource for our nation's development. And so over the last couple of months, there have been research and stakeholder consultations. This is complete, and it's now being finalized. The second one I'd like to highlight, and this one we've worked with is Statistician General, is the country's voluntary report to the United Nations on Sustainable Development Goals. South Africa in 2015 signed onto the Sustainable Development Agenda, as SDGs, and we also offered to be one of the countries that will do a voluntary review of how far we are. And we've been doing this work since the previous administration, but in the period under review, we had the opportunity to present this report, the voluntary national review report on SDGs to the United Nations. So those are the two really key things which I'd like to highlight for the NPC in the period under review. I'll hand over back to the DG.
Honourable Chairperson, thank you very much, and we can proceed then with the balance of Programme 2. The quota really has been the focus of establishing the new administration, and in this particular instance, the second part of Programme 2 deals with the internal planning issues, such as the development of the medium-term strategic framework, which is covered there. We've redesigned it somewhat, a little bit enhanced it in order to take care of reflections coming from the 25-year review. We now have a 5-year national plan and a 5-year monitoring, integrated monitoring framework, and that basically is what we are busy with now in setting up government. It will be finalized in October. The president will, cabinet will approve, and the president will take this through and sign ministerial performance agreements on the basis of this MTSF. We just thought it was important because to recognize that this quarter has largely been people doing this kind of work, which then culminates in the adoption of the MTSF, which includes the 5-year plan. So those are the indications. We've achieved all the targets, Chairperson, and all the engagements have been done, and the guidelines have been issued.
The important thing to indicate, which may relate, Honorable Lusuma, to the issue of legislation, is that emerging out of this exercise of redesigning the MTSF is principally this issue about better integration of government. And the one big achievement in this year is you will see there the linkage between the five-year plan and provincial PGDSs. 2 weeks ago, the President met with all the premiers. We have produced a draft MTSF, and for the first time, all the provinces are aligning to the national plan, and it's becoming one plan. A whole lot of hard work, but actually quite an achievement if we get to the point. We've now been asked to integrate IDPs as well into that framework. So we are really getting to a superb thing. In addition, the President announced in his State of the Nation address the need to look at district implementation model, incorporating all of that into one planning framework. So yes, to the Honourable Member Lusuma, we will be coming back with the integrated planning bill, which was scheduled in the 5th Parliament. It will come to the 6th. But we're just awaiting this finalization so that we can incorporate all those things that are happening now in the design of the new planning framework in order then to put them into legislation for enforcement and better implementation. We indicated there in that quarter that we achieved programs in relation to the National Spatial Development Framework. We just wanted to give you a sense of what that is, extensive work around development prioritization for the country. In the next one, Chairperson, we deal with the issue of Program 3, which is sector monitoring. The important thing there is the combination between Program 3 and Program 4 take us to what we said on the MTSF is actually the combined MTSF, which constitutes the integrated monitoring framework and the integrated five-year planning implementation plan. This just illustrates exactly how we've combined both indicators and sector monitoring, but also with frontline citizen-based, district-based MBSOs, presidential hotline, and preliminary impact assessments, which then give you a much comprehensive picture in terms of how we do our monitoring, and that's really going to signify the big change in this particular administration. In Program 4, Chairperson, we've achieved all the targets, and again, we want to just share two issues with you that come out of that. In this particular program, we do our reports of the previous financial year, but we do them in the quarter, as soon as all the data of the year has come in. And therefore, this team does the analysis reports in the first quarter, even though they are for the previous financial year, and reflect what people have done. What we do is work on them in the first quarter and produce them. And those analysis reports will just take a snapshot at all of them. One of them has already been in the public domain, but we wanted to just refer to it and confirm, and that is the issue of payment of service providers within or later than 30 days. We've done the analysis and it quite clearly indicates a real problem in this particular area. Here we show you where the problems lie, and very simply, the biggest problem amongst national departments or the Department of Water and Sanitation, which constitutes 78%, and 492 million that's outstanding in the 30-day payments in that area. In the provinces, we have two problematic areas, it's Gauteng and Eastern Cape, and the objective reality there is that total amount comes to 4.6 billion out of the 6.6 billion that is owed by other provinces as well, and if you combine the total, it's 7.1 billion. So we just wanted the facts about this issue to be clarified, but also to just indicate what we've done about it. This is a matter we've been seized with, particularly in financial year 18 and 19. The principal drivers, as I indicated, were challenges around water affairs. That has been resolved by the NMOC process of combining Water Affairs Department with the Human Settlement, and that issue, actually, at the time at which it happened, we were recommending that Water Affairs goes under administration, which would have ensured that they are actually handled differently because the challenges were piling up and we could see them. But I'm sure in Parliament, the members are fully aware of the processes that's held by SCOPA to deal with the old particular matters in relation to this. At provincial level, the key driver of non-payment of invoices is driven by a couple of things. The first most important thing is medical legal claims, which really come from health departments running out of budgets quite early in the financial year because of two principal drivers. One is in what we call the border provinces. part of what seems to happen is excessive demand, because other people who live outside the province or outside the country actually flood the health facilities. And so two things we wanted them to sort out. Payment records, i.e. people who do not qualify to be in those hospitals must pay. Two, sort out their record systems in order to ensure that they're able to deal with medical legal claims. We've done some investigations to find collusion amongst health officials in the record management areas, in the legal fraternity, which has really shifted from RAF. In resolving this matter, we've actually put forward, it's now currently in this legislative program, Honorable Lusoma, and it is the state, the amendment of the state liabilities bill, a very important piece of legislation, which will enable the state to be able to manage its liabilities and be able to reschedule its liabilities and pay them in accordance to affordability. The current practice where people claim $4 million for particular maladministration will be something of the past. So we really would like to encourage full consideration of that bill, because the state can pay through provision of health services if indeed something has happened, rather than lump sum amounts. The experience is they take the money, they come back, and basically they're back in the health system. The money is used for buying cars and houses. It's got nothing to do with treating the health condition for which they claimed. So even that practice, that bad practice that's happening, we're finding that this is also shifting to subs now around maladministration potentially. But it's just really driven by an unscrupulous group of lawyers who have been shut down on the RAF side and are finding other loopholes to take care of, to take advantage of the system. So we've dealt with Gauteng. Chairperson, if I can just confirm, you'll see the Gauteng figures have dropped from $4 billion in 2017-18 to $2.5 billion. That's because we've been working with them in the last financial year. Effectively, we're on our way to the Eastern Cape to go into the same intervention and actually help solve the problem. So if you can solve the Eastern Cape and Gauteng where it occurs, hopefully that will come down. But, however, all of these other matters will be dealt with and that will be reduced fully. There are issues about including 30-day payments in the performance agreements of DGs and other measures which will help to bring them down quite significantly. This is a very, I'll just run through these ones. These are reports that indicate the work that we did, again, on the presidential hotline. As you can see, the red areas just indicate where the frequency of calls is highest. So our people are calling on the presidential hotline looking for information about government, employment, and as you can see, the red area. So we've seen a change in this profile as well, where people previously were calling to complain about services. Now it seems the shift is more to their personal needs and hoping that they will be assisted in meeting their own requirements. There are still issues about electricity and education and water in many areas, but there is a shift towards more personalized services rather than community-based services, and that's a good sign. Here we give you the outcome of our frontline facilities monitoring. We've, in that financial year, done 432, the majority of which are education, the majority of whom are in the Eastern Cape province where we're experiencing real problems around that. We also give you the information about the executive visits, of which a total has been 20, and we indicate where they were, and though that includes Imbizo and other type of executive visits that have been done. The findings generally show us very clear categories of where people are suggesting they are experiencing the biggest number of problems. Poor intergovernmental relations, inadequate planning, budget allocation, non-communication of findings to executive structures. So matters are raised, but they don't go to the mayor, the council, for decisions to be made. Inadequate maintenance of buildings, long turnaround times for filling vacancies, inadequate malfunctioning of equipment, lack of bulk services, the phenomenon of facilities being built and bulk services are not there, police station without water, clinic without water, clinic without electricity, then can't operate, etc. And then the unstable and unreliable network of connectivity. Our responsibility here is when we pick up those problems, we call the necessary institution to come and fix it. And that's the action that we start in the following year, particularly to monitor whether they are implementing our recommendations. And generally, this one provides the overall areas of findings around weaknesses in service delivery and in the various areas that we have found. In Program 5, we deal with evaluation, evidence, and knowledge systems. In their chair, we've achieved our targets, but they've actually done additional work. They've done the two reports that they aim to, but they've also given data analysis assignments which were completed for various sectors that come to them for assistance. So they've even exceeded their targets. This one, we talk to the vacancy rate, the average of which is 10.5, and we indicate exactly what happened 1 month, I mean 1 month from April to May to June, but I've already explained that in the beginning. That pie chart shows you exactly the two posts that were filled internally and how they impact on the overall, which really would have been underneath 10% if they were not filled internally. We're not encouraging that. We also like promoting our people. This one gives you employment equity according to race and according to SMS as well. The important thing is to indicate here that we have overs and unders, and in particular instances, the African population is over by 8.6%, the colored population is under by 5.7%. And when this happens, Chair, our HR just issues an instruction to the panel of recruitment, and they are required to prioritize the group that is under, and they are discouraged from employing those who are over. And that's the way we normally manage it in correcting those actions. That one deals with the issue of race. Again, in that particular group overall, we find the colored population is underrepresented, and the Indian population, particularly SMS, is overrepresented. But it's something that we work towards balancing across, and this one would show you very specifically that the 6% Indian population of over as opposed to the colored population of minus 5.4. Again, that translates into a straight instruction to HR in recruitment, who must be next and who must be prioritized in order to balance out that figure. This issue about gender just indicates that there are more women. Whilst there are more women in the department overall, there are less women at SMS, and I think it's just something we need to reflect. But also importantly, responding to Honourable Member Lissouma, we have come to some determination and agreement with DPSA. There was this tension between us and them about who monitors what, but now we have absolute clarity, just to get rid of the misunderstanding. They are responsible for monitoring Program 1 issues, i.e. finance, HR, and all of those matters. DPME is responsible, with this clarity now, of monitoring Program 2 to infinity, i.e. the NDP. Everything else that's outside of Program 1. So now we have clarity. You'll even see it will come with a transfer of programs like MPAC back to them, because those are Program 1 issues. See, now we do NDP, which is anything else, development, everything else for all other departments. And that's quite an important distinction. I just thought I would clarify that we would be encroaching on their turf if we started monitoring gender in employment. It's DPSA that would do that, Honourable Member, and we would stay away from that unless they clobber us again from encroaching on their territory. And that shows you the figures around the rate. On the budget, the two things to mention on the budget is simply that we have lost, because of the National Macro Organization of the State, the youth development function. I think we reported it in the last meeting, and that goes with a budget of 470 million that has been transferred. We're currently in transfer. There's just a legal process until the time that they actually transfer legally. So we still do their payments and manage their work until that legal point has been reached. But that budget is now in the departments of women, youth, and people with disability. Just overall, in terms of our financial arrangements, compensation, because of the vacancies, we were under because of that 10.5%. On goods and services, we had less, but that's because of the CETA delays in terms of the invoices. We do have a challenge, and I'm happy it's being discussed in other portfolio committees. We do have a challenge with Public Works, and the Public Works invoices for our second building have not been issued to us, and therefore it looks like we are underspending, but they've not issued us with invoices. It's a generic problem. The Minister has written to all of us for over a year. The Minister of Public Works has written to all of us to say, you owe me money. The reality is that people haven't told her that they haven't invoiced us. So this is a problem I'm sure Parliament will deal with in overcoming that challenge, because it's not just us. It's a lot of departments that are seeing this as a particular challenge. The capital assets thing, we just indicate an over expenditure by 83%. That's not necessarily a negative. It's IT equipment. that was supposed to be delivered in quarter two, it was delivered in quarter one, and we're very happy because sometimes where you involve IT, sometimes there are big delays. So we're just fortunate that they delivered earlier than we expected. In effect, that's a 500,000 extra that was spent in quarter one instead of quarter two. But we're happy we've got the equipment instead of the opposite, which would have been a delay. And then in transfers, we stand at the same point. On that note, I thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for your opportunity.
Thank you. The Honorable Minister was correct to say you can summarize. Well done, Ms. Bumi. The suggestion here, I'm going to allow you now to ask questions, but is it in the interest of time? I would request the department, if of course you are happy with that, the department to provide answers in writing to you, honourable members, of all the questions that you are going to ask. Honourable Soma, I see you must as well respond to this request I'm putting, that the department provide answers in writing, not here today, but to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think I must confess that you have preempted me, because I was going to say that probably we should request the department, even though they would have responded verbally in the meeting, but also to forward those issues in writing so that you can track them, because if they are verbally reported, you are unable, which are not necessary to the subject matter. Like now we're dealing with the quarterly report, but also we have been raising other issues that has been responded to, as to say we are going to be doing this, it's in the pipeline, so that we can track those issues as well. I'm 100% with you, but I was going to put a rather that probably, okay, let me just deal with it. Moving forward, the committee I'm suggesting, not necessarily the PME, but the committee through your good self-chair, you can look at that at your management meetings, that we get a report, a status report on frontline service, as it were, in terms of the impact and value for money for the imbezos, the presidential hotline, in terms of the turnaround time and also unblocking whatever blockages may be in other spheres of government and all those things, the distress mining as well, that probably one would love to, in terms of our spaces, the PME family as it were. And you have spoken to the issue of 30 days payment. I had a note of public works here. So I'm happy that then I'm not going to say that we need a report unless the members would like us then to get a full presentation in terms of the picture, as it were. Okay, the HR related one, no, I'll park it because you have provided me guidance on that one. Then I'll do in writing to the respectable DPSA in terms of that space. But just to say for your sense of comfort is to say, who monitors the departments when they challenge cases, which is HR-related matters, cases that they know manage senior management, if I may say that generally so, if they challenge cases knowing very well that they are going to lose cases because they know that in any event it's not our money, which I raised in last week's DPSA meeting when we were engaging with DPSA, but I'm just saying it aloud so that you understand why I'm not going to, I'm just parking it, but I'm fully 100% with the proposal, Chair, in view of time. Thank you so much.
Honorable Clark.
Thank you, Chair. Just in terms of the monitoring findings, you know, I just also want to understand, you've put all the critical issues in this document. And once this has been done, how do you monitor that the departments actually deal with these issues? Because for example, I just look at the shortages of ambulances and police vehicles. And I know that at every police station across this country, the police do not have enough vehicles to do effective policing in terms of norms and standards. And then, you know, I'd like to know, how do we fix this? How do we deal with this when these findings come out? Thank you.
Ms. Bumi, can I correct this? Don't send the responses directly to members, but to the secretary of the committee. Yeah, then we will get those responses from the secretary. Yeah, let me correct that. Yeah. Honorable members, one other thing that I want to mention to you, which I, of course, I'm sure you are going to agree. Item 8, which is the adoption of the minutes of the previous meeting, this item, we will do it next week. Agreed? Agreed. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.